This is the Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. And this week we are discussing upcoming releases, including RoboCop, About Last Night, and Winter's Tale. We're going to have a spoiler-free review of That Awkward Moment. You know, you've been waiting for it. Our From the Outside In topic this week, the most inspiring casting in films. Latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and with me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
Hey, it's good to be back.
You feeling better?
I am feeling much better. Thank you.
Excellent. Justin Mocumber.
That awkward moment really just describes our entire pre-show time.
It really does.
You have
most
no
of
idea.
The stuff that can't make the air because we just don't care. So, hey. And Brian Williams.
Hey.
Oh.
Hey.
Oh, how are you, B?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Fantastic.
That's fucking awesome to hear.
Did you guys hear, and this is probably going to make, well, actually, Justin and Scott are a little giddy about this, about Seth Gordon, who directed Identity Thief and Horrible Bosses, and now apparently he's going to direct the Uncharted adaptation. Never saw that coming.
Why would that make us giddy?
I'm asking as sarcastic. Okay.
Are you worried about it? Is it a bad thing to you, Justin?
Well, nothing in Seth Gordon's experience or his, you know, his bibliography leads me to think that he's capable of an Uncharted movie. I mean, Uncharted has some comedy, but that's, you know, not the point of the story. It's action. It's spectacle. It's explosions and shooting and ancient locations. It's Indiana Jones, but I think with a shot of adrenaline in a modern setting. It's not something that I would necessarily hand over to a guy who's primarily known for his comedic movies like Identity Thief and Horrible Bosses. Sure, he's got a great love of video games. You know, he did King of Kong, which was a great documentary, but does that mean he's appropriate for this film? I don't know. I mean, he's certainly not the first guy that I would have thought or picked. If he's really assigned to it, then now all I can do is cross my fingers and hope he does a great job. But I'm a little nervous, yeah.
I'm more optimistic than you are because I'm at least excited that he knows games and is in the gaming culture.
Yeah, the way he's going to put, like, Jason Bateman as Nathan Drake now?
Shut your face.
And by the way, for people that are listening, they're like, what the are they talking about? Uncharted is a PS PlayStation game. It's huge if you're into video games.
It's a PS PlayStation game, folks.
Yeah, whatever. Hey, you're the gamer guy. You explain it. I ain't got time for this business.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
But it's like it's like Indiana Jones. Essentially, is what it is.
It's more like it's like a modern Indiana Jones. It's the
thank
character
you,
is
you
more.
Thank you for repeating that.
The character is a little bit more plucky than
more plucky.
Plucky.
Does that mean more giddy,
he's
more
fat?
Happy?
He's pluckier.
He's a little funnier than Indy.
Yeah, he's got a little more sense of humor, and he's kind of a younger version. But like Justin said, it's all about, you know, are discovering these ancient relics and that kind of thing. He's actually named after – his name is Nathan Drake, so he's named after Sir Francis Drake. And in the original game, he's chasing after Sir Francis Drake's treasure. I think this has the potential to be – that video game adaptation that we might have been waiting for a couple of reasons. Number one, Uncharted is an interesting story as opposed to some of the other games like Magic the Gathering that they've been going after and Sly Cooper, which I don't have any personal attachment to, but this is one that is highly popular, has a cool story, has interesting characters. And although the guy is not known for high-profile action movies, he's, like Justin said, more known for comedies, I'm excited about the fact that the guy is a gamer. He knows games. He did the King of Kong, which is a documentary that
it's a really good documentary.
It really is. But I'd rather have someone that is a and I hate to say subpar filmmaker because he's not bad. I mean, those movies were done well. It's just they were a different style than what you're expecting with Uncharted.
I would argue Identity Thief was done well, but go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. I
would argue against it. I think it was okay.
Okay. But horrible bosses. I thought was fine. I thought it was shot okay. I mean, but it's a comedy. You don't watch comedies for the way they're shot. I would rather have someone that is good enough to be dangerous in a movie that understands the gaming culture than someone that is a Spielberg or someone that has nothing that knows nothing about the property.
Well, here's what I say. I get what you're saying. It makes sense to me. But I also think you need a visual director. Mm-hmm. I don't, like Justin said, I don't see anything that points to him being a visual mm-hmm. director. Originally, they had David O. Russell set for this. Now, I could see him shooting an action movie. He did Three Kings, and he's done several action scenes throughout his movies. This guy's got nothing. I mean, he's got nothing. And this is, I get what you're saying, he needs a love for the material, but he also has to have an eye for that same material. And I don't think video games and movies are the same medium at all.
But I get that, but he's got to start somewhere. And I think Uncharted is beloved enough, but it's not Halo. You know what I'm saying? It's not like that huge franchise. Uncharted is big amongst gamers, but your average person's not going to know who Nathan Drake is, and I think that's a good starting point for someone like him.
Well, and he's got a... Seth Gordon's lucky in that Uncharted is one of the most cinematic games mm-hmm. that I've ever played. I mean, and somebody actually has. You can go to YouTube and look and find them. They've gone through all three games, and they've just taken just the cutscenes alone and spliced them together one after the other into a seamless movie. And the first game, I think, has got an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes of just cutscenes, which doesn't include really any of the combat things that go on in the middle. So because these games are so story dense, I think you would have an easier time mm-hmm. picking what elements of that story you want to do as a film, instead of having just kind of this blank slate of a game like, say, like World of Warcraft, and then you have to craft an entirely from whole cloth story. Mm-hmm. There's a great one already there. They just have to do the right casting and hope that all the talent behind the camera is up to the task. But this might be a topic we discuss on an After Dark soon.
Yeah, they will have more information on this as it goes. So
we'll find out. I saw the cover of one of those games, and I think I saw some jungle trees. That's about all I remember of it.
Thanks, Brian.
Just saying.
I think that was the first one.
Well, I don't even know where to go with that. Thanks, Ben. There were a lot of sequel news. Let me try this again. There were a lot of sequels announced in the last week. Taken 3, we almost mentioned it last episode, but we had to edit it for whatever reason. I don't remember why. It was just whatever.
Because you went on too long rambling.
Well, usually that's your spot, so I'm sorry I took your time.
Sorry I couldn't be here to keep it short.
Taken 3 is coming out. Lego Movie 2, which Lego Movie should be out by the time you listen to this, but it hasn't even opened technically. And they're already planning a second one, but reviews are stellar.
Who called for that? I called that.
You called there was a sequel? Because last week you weren't too high on it.
No, because the episode where we talked about which franchises did we think, or what movies that were coming up would spawn a franchise.
I believe that was Brian, actually.
No, I picked Lego.
Okay. Nobody's fighting. Just back off.
I called it once again. Justin is ahead of the curve.
And hot. Well, yeah. Hang on.
Just because you got plenty of curves doesn't mean that you're ahead of the curve.
So far ahead of it.
And also, Hot Tub Time Machine 2 comes out this Christmas. So
oh, please let that one be the 90s instead of the 80s.
All I know is John Cusack is not returning. So
oh, thank God.
He's not going to be in there. Now let's go to the real movie news. Well, before we get the Oscar contest. The details are on the website. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com for our Oscar contest. You can win a Blu-ray or a chance to be on the show, whatever you prefer. And the subject line is, I'm an Oscar ho. That's right. I'm an Oscar ho. So now we can move on to movie news. Scotty,
can I sign up?
No, you're ineligible.
Fuck.
All right, you win a chance to be on the Hollywood Outsider podcast. Congratulations, Brian.
Well, he wins an opportunity to pick, which...
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
We'll make you buy me something.
We're going to do a host thing. Don't worry. We're not there yet, Chief. Just wait. God.
Yeah, I win every time. So.
We talked about this last week. You were here. Now let's go on to real movie news. Leonardo DiCaprio and Jonah Hill are re-teaming for The Ballad of Richard Jewell, where Jonah Hill is going to star as Richard Jewell. Scotty, who is Richard Jewell?
Richard Jewell was this guy back in 1996 during the Summer Olympics, which were taking place in Atlanta, which is apropos considering the Winter Olympics are starting this coming week. Anyway, he was initially a hero because he found a suspicious backpack that turned out to be a bomb, and he did the whole movie thing where he got rid of the bomb and it let it explode in a safe place and nobody got hurt. And then thanks.
Seriously?
Right. And then thanks to social media, within 24 hours of it, he was labeled a suspect.
Well, you sound like a horrible bomber if he threw it the wrong place.
You would think, but apparently that's what this whole story is about. And I mean, again, this is 96 before the advent of Facebook and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We didn't have, it wasn't that kind of social media, but I mean.
It's just a bunch of people yelling. That guy.
No, I mean, word spread. The media got a hold of the story and somehow he got made out to be the bad guy. And I think it sounds like an interesting story. What's interesting to me is that Jonah Hill is actually playing the lead and DiCaprio is supporting him, which is backwards from Wolf of Wall Street. I'm excited for it. I am surprised to see Jonah Hill really come up on his own a little bit. He went from Superbad to Moneyball and then now Wolf of Wall Street and now this. I mean, he's been nominated. He was nominated twice now, right?
Yeah, that's his second Oscar nomination.
So it's
the same year he had Satan's penis waving at him. He gets an Oscar nomination.
That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tommy's everything.
I think he was dead before Satan's cock came out.
Shh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoilers.
Exactly.
Had he lost the weight for that one?
No, he lost it at 21 Jump Street. Then he gained it all back.
Oh, did he?
Like the week later, apparently.
So that's the key to his power, apparently.
Apparently, chubby Jonah wins. I don't know.
Or does he?
I think it's great that he is expanding as an actor. I'm sorry, I really didn't mean that.
I'll get what you laughed at.
And he and DiCaprio are working together because they seem to actually be becoming friends. They were on Saturday Night Live together, which I thought was one of the best.
That was hilarious.
Bits of Saturday Night Live's history where they do the Titanic reenactment. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to anything that makes actors take a little bit different of an approach than they have in the past. And I don't like him in his comedies. I don't find him as funny as everybody else does, but I really like him as a dramatic actor.
Mm-hmm. He just doesn't draw a lot of opinion or emotion out of me. I mean, I don't dislike him. I think he's a good, he's kind of like just like that guy. He's like a good filler.
I see what you're saying. You don't think he's, you know, a lead.
Mean? I don't, he doesn't overwhelm me. I mean, he doesn't do a whole lot for me, but he doesn't take away from the movie either. I think he's a fantastic compliment, but I don't really, you know, just go, Jonah Hill's in this movie. I've got to see it.
Right. So he makes a good carrot in the stew, but he's not really the beef.
Well, that's kind of what I'm looking forward to see him take the lead, actually, for once, instead of being the support, see how he handles it.
Hmm. Well, we'll find out soon. What's it called? The Ballad of Richard Jewell, technically. Tentatively.
It's technically also called the Ballad of Tom.
Technically, tentatively.
All right, it's confirmed. This is really big news. It was all over the interwebs. Jesse Eisenberg will be Lex Luthor, and Jeremy Irons will be Alfred in the upcoming Batman versus Superman. The casting is extremely surprising. Absolutely, I'm not taking away from that, and I'm sure Justin has a soliloquy about it. But I want to know, is Superman actually going to be in this damn movie? Because at this point, I'm wondering when he has time to show up.
I'm telling you, just like when the Wonder Woman casting came out, I said that I think that she will probably be a cameo, maybe a little more, but there's not going to be much of her in it. This is purely Warner Brothers establishing her in the fold so that when her film or the Justice League movie comes out, everybody's aware of her. They've seen her do maybe something, and then it's enough. I think the same thing is true for this. I think that Lex Luthor, you know, being played by Jesse Eisenberg, will appear in this movie. He may have a couple of scenes in the movie. I am really doubting that either he or Jeremy Irons are really going to be much of a presence in the movies. It's, again, purely there to establish them within the Warner Brothers film franchise of these films.
You don't know that. That's just your
opinion. No, I don't know anything, but that's my speculation. That's why I'm not worried. Oh, fuck, how are they actually going to fit Superman and Batman in this movie when they got Wonder Woman and Lex Luthor and Alfred and everybody else? I think this is how they do it.
It's almost sounding like Justice League at this point. Like they're already doing the movie.
Well, they were already going to have Batman in it. So you could, it's not a great stretch to have assumed Alfred might, you know, show up with, you know, your dinner, sir, or whatever the fuck his one scene is going to be. And we already kind of figured that Lex Luthor was going to be in this a while ago when we were speculating, you know, who might be getting it. Was it going to be Terry O'Quinn? Was it going to be Bryan
Cranston? And every other bald actor working.
We already knew he was going to be in the movie in some capacity. Now we just have a confirmed name.
Fair enough. Now, Jesse Eisenberg, you like it?
I think it's an interesting choice, and I like that they're not casting, you know, in the mold of what we've seen before. In the previous films for Superman, Lex Luthor has always been an older guy, and he's always been bald. Now, I think, you know, it was you and I, Aaron, on Facebook a couple weeks ago, or maybe earlier this week, we were talking about Smallville and how in that TV show, Lex Luthor was a younger man. He was of a contemporary age to Clark. Sure, he was bald, but he still wasn't the older guy we're used to. I think that's cool in this film that they're going with a guy his age, his look. And I actually think Jesse will be able to pull off a pretty good villainous character. I thought he was a pretty big asshole in Now You See Me, with a lot of smarmy lines and a little bit of darkness to him. I think he'll bring the same to this and do a really good job.
I love Jesse Eisenberg.
I do too. I think
he brings the smart to the role.
Yes. Yes. Definitely.
And I don't know exactly how smart the guy is. I think he is very smart. Just from some stuff that I've heard and read and know about his personal life, but like the roles that he plays, he always plays a guy that's pretty much smarter than everybody else in the movie. And I think he's got that clout that he brings to the role that I think is going to help the Lex Luthor role. Physically, I've got to kind of cock my head a little bit and go, I don't know, but it's crazy enough to where I'm excited about it.
Yeah. I feel the same. And he gives that same air off screen too. We saw him at a screening in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of
got in our face again.
Yeah. We met him. Yeah. We met Jesse Eisenberg.
Thanks.
And he kind of, and I don't mean this necessarily in a bad way, but he kind of has that air about him. Like he's better than everybody in the room.
He does. He's an actor.
Very much.
He's very much an actor.
And I think that a lot of people that are upset with his casting choice are looking at films like Zombieland and
the Michael Cera films.
Right.
As I like to refer to them.
Right. And I mean, Social Network, he did a really good job. He was kind of an asshole in that for a lot of that movie too.
I think he'd be perfect. He, in my opinion, took a leap forward, just a huge leap forward with Now You See Me. Now, I'm not saying that was the best movie in the whole wide world or anything like that. It was a fun movie. It's, you know, it's not trying too hard. But the way that he pulls off the kind, the gentle, the genius, the asshole, and he does it all in one character, I thought just showed what kind of role he can actually do. Mm-hmm. And seeing him in the Facebook movie where you don't know if you hate him, like him, hate him more, whatever the question is, he just kept bouncing all over the place in terms of like him, hate him. The guy that can do that, that's the kind of guy I want playing a villain. Mm-hmm. Any villain. Not even just Lex Luthor, just a villain.
Now,
I need somebody that can be relatable and evil at the same time.
Now, you guys obviously follow the comics more. Is he going to have to be bald? I mean, can he not?
Yes.
He's got that curly hair that I just don't see as Lex Luthor at all.
Gone. He's got great cheekbones.
Yep. Yeah, Gene Hackman had it too, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Lex Luthor in the comics, he had hair for a little while. But, Lex Luthor is bald, and that's no matter what, that's how people see him. And I think it's going to be really weird seeing Jesse Eisenberg bald.
Well, and the people,
his hair is so much a part of his look.
Yep.
People that are saying that, oh, it's a brand new approach. That if you saw Smallville, this is the approach.
Right.
Really, it's very similar. I also want to say Jeremy Irons, great casting, even though I want Michael Caine in every Batman movie from now on.
See, that seems like
I'll take Jeremy Irons. He's a great actor.
I agree. He's a great
actor.
He's
won like 97 Oscars or something.
He is a very – and I'm excited about it too. I think it's a great cast. I think it kind of youngs him down. You know, it kind of brings him the –
a little more vitality.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because all the other – the past Alfreds have been just these decrepit crypt keeper type people. And, you know, I mean, they're – just really, really old. And I mean, they're not going to be, I mean, the chances of Jeremy Irons being around for the next 10 years doing Justice League movies or something in that vein is a lot more possible than say Michael Caine. With all due respect to Michael Caine, because I love Michael Caine. Don't get me wrong. I love Michael Caine. One of my favorite actors.
Well, why are you wishing him death then, you son of a bitch?
I'm not wishing him death. I'm just playing the odds here.
I mean, Alfred in the comics, I mean, he's former special forces military.
Mm-hmm.
He should be a guy who's, you know, got some stones. And I think Jeremy Irons will be able to portray those things. Let's
just get The Rock and just dye his hair gray. Bam.
Oh, fuck, you're blowing my mind, dude.
I think it's a real.
How awesome that could be. Do you smell what Alfred's cooking?
Here's your cod. An oatmeal.
All right, let's move on. People are, that's enough comic book crap. All right, so not all of us care about the Oscars.
Nope.
I do. Brian does. Scott does. So basically, I'm just saying Justin doesn't care.
Yep.
But what about this story? The Academy Awards nominated the song Alone Yet Not Alone, then rescinded the nomination because writer Bruce Broughton, I hope I'm saying that right, sent an email to 70 Academy members asking them to give the song a listen. Now, I'm asking you, Brian, when major studios spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on these campaigns so their prospective actor, director, whatever, wins an Oscar, is it a little insane that they kick this guy back?
I think it is, and I think in this case it's really got to do with perception, because what he did was he sent an email to all these people and he says, "Would you listen to it? I'm not asking for your vote, but would you listen to this?" And because it's such a small movie, chances are how people are. People are busy. They're mm-hmm. not going to listen to or watch every single movie. They're not going to watch every or listen to every piece of music. They're not going to, read every screenplay, whatever.
If they're voting on it, I would hope they are.
You would hope.
Yeah, well, trust me. There's a lot of things that people that have the power to vote on stuff that don't take the time to actually watch every game.
How many elections do you go to and you just check off some boxes?
That's true.
Yeah.
Great point. Again, I think this is about the perception because I think that hey, maybe the Academy had a legitimate reason. I still haven't found one yet. Mm-hmm. I haven't
seen
or read anything that says, you know what, that's a very good point. Here, they never said why, at least from what I've dug up, I've never found it. Here's exactly why we did it, and here's why he crossed the line. It's all about we're preserving the integrity and blah, 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 smokehouse bullshit at that point.
Yeah.
So that alone tells me that there's some shenanigans going on. I can't say to what their biases are. Of course, everybody's screaming that it's anti-Christianity, whatever the case is. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't in the meetings that when I decided to pull it. So,
which is crap. We tried to get you in there.
I know. But apparently I didn't get there in time. I was 2 minutes late, and they said, no, sir, you can't go in.
Here's my question. Where did he get all the email addresses? Is that like public knowledge?
They're Academy members, so yeah, I'm sure he got it from there.
And is he the first person to ever do that? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's marketing.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he's not the first person to send out an email saying, hey, would you at least listen to it? Mm-hmm. Just give it a shot. It did happen. They did rescind the nomination the Academy has about 30 years ago with The Godfather, because it come to find out the Godfather theme was actually used in a movie about 20 years before that, 15, 20 years before that. So
that makes sense to me, though.
Exactly. That's okay. All right. This isn't original. Okay. This is, fine. This one slipped through the cracks. We'll find something to replace it. I still haven't heard of a legitimate reason why this was pulled. And I don't know. I don't want to say that it's they hate Christianity or something like that. I don't want to say that's the reason. But there are some sort of bias about it. Maybe they just feel like the fact that, this is just a small movie that nobody's really watching. And let's pick something else that's a little bit more recognizable.
There's a lot of questions to it.
I got another question. Is this even worth fighting for at this point? Even if he does win this battle and gets the nomination, are they going to vote for him just out of spite?
I think it is. Well, he probably wouldn't win, but I think it is just for the fact that because it's a small movie, small independent studio, he has that right. I mean, he doesn't have the money behind him. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going by what I've read. So obviously, there might be something that I've missed or somewhere along the line, but I've read a lot of articles on it. It seems wrong. You've got the Weinsteins and all the other studios that spend hundreds of thousands of dollars marketing, taking out ads and giant newspapers and Variety and everything else, pimping their movie for these Oscars because Oscars mm-hmm. bring money. This guy sends out 70 emails and he's booted? I think that's bullshit. I'm just calling it as I see it. And what I've seen seems like bullshit.
Plus, I would be willing to bet that if the movie were themed on some kind of agenda that is more in line with the academy. In line with the academy, then it wouldn't have gotten booted.
It's like I'm making weed legal or something.
Right.
Even the guy's own comments said that, look, this is the most bare bones, knuckleheaded, I guess, propaganda that I can possibly come up with. I don't have a budget to get on talk shows and you know, to have all this information, you know, thrown out all over the, you know, the links and all this other stuff to kind of thrown out all over the internet. So he goes, I just sent it, you know, it's the most grass, it's as grassroots as you can get. I don't know what the problem is. So
it's kind of sad. We'll see how it plays out, but don't check that on your Oscar contest ballot, by the way, because you will already lose. Now, Scott, this made you squee inside. I rarely see you act like a little kid when you're not playing a video game, but you were squeeing. Disney is going forward with a live-action/CGI hybrid, think Smurfs, of Chip and Dale, you know, the Rescue Rangers. So why does that make you feel like a kid again, exactly?
Oh, holy nostalgia, man. Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers was my favorite after-school cartoon when I was a kid. Hands down, there was DuckTales, there was Tailspin, there was Gummy Bears,
Gummy Bears?
Darkwing Duck. Yeah.
There was a cartoon called Gummy Bears?
Yeah. Disney's Gummy Bears.
Oh. Now I kind of got to go watch.
And then there was Rescue Rangers, which was my favorite, which it was based on Chip and Dale, which was the old Disney cartoon. They were actually like cameos in like Pluto cartoons or something.
So not the strippers?
No, not Chip and Dale's.
Okay.
Chip and Dale's,
all
but
right.
Chip and Dale's.
It's good that you distinguish, because I was looking something else up.
Yeah, for you?
Research.
Yeah, for research. Quotation marks. Anyway, so the cartoon took a different turn. It was Chip and Dale are now like a detective agency or something. Obviously, it's for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Chip was like the sleuth that was very hard-nosed, and then Dale was the goofy one that had the sense of humor, and they had some other friends and that kind of thing. Man, seriously, probably my favorite cartoon as a kid growing up. I want to love this idea, but I'm not sold on it being a good thing, honestly.
Because of the mix? Because they're doing the whole...
Well, just because of seeing what I've seen with the Chipmunks and with the Smurfs and those movies, they just make those look really dumb. I loved Alvin and the Chipmunks when I was a kid. I loved the Smurfs when I was a kid. And those movies are just oh, I hope they don't ruin it.
They did that to my Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo was my favorite cartoon.
Oh, you didn't like the movies?
I liked the first one. It was okay.
I say that. I never saw the Chipmunks in the theater. I never even saw either of the Smurfs movies.
Oh, you are missing out. I highly recommend the Smurfs movie.
But more than likely, I will probably see Chip and Dale's just because of that's like the biggest nostalgia cartoon for me. You know, I'm not expecting to like it, but I got to see it. So,
aw. Three people out there are like, I remember that.
Did you guys, were you guys like in your 40s by that point? Or?
Oh, God.
I'm more of a DuckTales guy.
Okay. Were you?
Nice job.
All right, good job, Scott. Good job. Fucking asshole.
All right. Well, from the department of you can't do this crap after it's already come out, J.K. Rowling dropped a little nugget, and it applies because it's about a story that also was a movie. She's now saying that she, quote-unquote, made a mistake with the Harry Potter ending, and she should have had Harry marry Hermione, and Ron shouldn't have married. Can you do that? Justin, you write and stuff. That's what you keep telling us. Isn't this art? I mean, can you just go back and change your whole opinion for something that was decided years ago?
Sure you can. I mean, for as much as a piece of art is out there, and so therefore it's kind of cemented for all time as what it is, even, you know, for the person who created it, they're always kind of evaluating it in their head and churning it over. And perhaps with time, she decided that, you know, I wanted to do it, but I didn't do it for some reason. Now I kind of wish I had. I don't really know her complete thinking on it, but I do understand her desire to rethink what she had put out there. Now, for me, the question is, should you say that out loud? And that's a harder question to answer. When you know, Stephen King wrote the Gunslinger, he wrote it, God, several decades ago. And then about 10 years ago, he re-released it with changes mm-hmm. made to it to make it work better with the books that he had written after it in that Dark Tower series. So it's not that it's it's not, artists can and do make changes to what they do. With her, though, it's harder because it's a book and it's a movie series. It is such a defined story that so many people all over the world know. It's easier. I got one last thing.
All right.
You know, it's not like in a comic book where somebody decides, oh, I don't quite like how this happened, so I'm just going to kind of change it and then sweep that stuff under the rug. And in the smaller community that likes it, oh, they just kind of go with it. It's not like she can now change anything. She just wishes she could have. And I understand that.
She could have changed that at any time during the 7 or 8 books that were in that series. She wasn't even done with the series whenever the movies were coming out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It wouldn't have taken but very subtle turns that she could have made. And it wouldn't have, I don't know, at least as far, like, I've never read the books, that I'll give that caveat. But as far as the movies goes, I'm going off the movies, but they could have done so many subtle little things to have her kind of drift more towards Harry. You know, of course, put Ron off to the side, which is probably what everybody wanted, you know, anyway. But
she could have. But when did she make this proclamation to herself that I made a mistake?
Well, she apparently said that she realized it early in. That's what she wanted to do from the very beginning. But she got on one little tangent and decided she'd go from there. I mean,
and
I don't know.
And that's okay. I mean, just because she didn't make the change and she kept it with Hermione and Ron and Harry and, oh, Jesus, I cannot believe I don't remember her name.
You get me.
Ron's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that's what she ultimately went with and later kind of wished she hadn't, it's not like she's committing some kind of crime.
Yeah, well, no, yeah, absolutely.
Here's what I'll say, what I think of it. I think it's okay that she changed her mind. I think it's a real shitty move that she said it out loud. I think
I can agree with that.
I think you've got a fan base. This is probably one of the most devoted fan bases outside of like Lord of the Rings. And you had plenty of time if you really wanted to make that change. If you really were dead set, that's the way it needs to end. You're the only person that can make that change. I mean, honestly. Now, you felt that you'd written to yourself into too many corners and you couldn't get out of it. Fair enough. I think a good writer could have written themselves out of it personally, but that's just an opinion. But if that's the story you told, that's the way that you put it out there, that's the
Jenny.
Way.
Jenny. Shit.
Okay, Jenny.
God, I thought of it.
And that's the way you put it on the screen. Commit to it. I think you commit to it because otherwise you're doing your fans a disservice because now they have this in their head. And for a lot of them, that world is complete and it is, you know, it's finite. It's decided. And to have him throw that in there, go write another book if you want to change it or go make some kind of alternate reality or something if that's what you want to do. But to say, I wish I would have done that, I think that just it does a disservice to all your fans that followed you, to those that were loyal to the story and to where it ended up, and those that really believed in that because, you know, they're sold, okay, Ron and Hermione are together. Yay. Oh, wait, she didn't even want it. You know, I just think it does such a disservice to the fans. I really do.
Here's what I think. The books have been written for forever. The movies have been done for a couple of few years now.
Yeah, till they remake them. Yeah.
Till they remake them, right? Nobody's talking about J.K. Rowling anymore. This was her way to get back in the media a little bit and have people talk about her.
Okay, I don't know who you're talking to, but she's still getting plenty of press between the other books that she's been putting out. And then she talked recently about wanting to do more Harry Potter stories. So maybe you haven't heard her name spoken of.
Okay.
But some of us have. So I don't think
attention. I mean, in all fairness to Scott, I mean, she is not nearly in the limelight as she was, you know, a few years ago. I mean, that's true. She's still trying to, she's still getting stuff out there and she's still doing things and she's still doing circuits. But, you know, Geordi from freaking Star Trek Next Generation is still doing conventions too. Doesn't necessarily mean that everybody in the, you know, that he's, you know, on the A-list right now.
But that's why I wanted to shut down that line of thinking. This is not just a grab for attention, you know, and to get in the news cycle.
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly call her Harvey Weinstein right now.
Well, we'll see how this pans out. I mean, they're going to remake it. Maybe she'll change it for the next series because they're going to remake it at some point. Now let's go to the mopey news of the week, and that is the sad demise of Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm not going to get into why he died, because that'll just get me on a tangent, and I don't want to do that. But he did die tragically. He is left with children and family that, you know, we feel very bad for. He's a very accomplished actor. He's done a lot of great things. So we thought, in retrospect, we would kind of leave you with our favorite performances of Philip Seymour Hoffman. And we also want to let you know, Hunger Games was mostly finished. Some people are wondering what's going to happen with that. Apparently there's one crucial scene left, and they're trying to find a workaround, which I have no idea what it is because I haven't read the books. So if you've read the books, you might know what that is, but I'm sure it's near the very end of the film. So let's go with Brian. What is your favorite performance of Mr. Hoffman?
Well, I mean, he's, you know, he's known for a lot of stuff, and he's critically acclaimed and all that stuff. But the one that really kind of it's he's really a kind of a background actor in it. But the one that I have always, I guess, kind of just attached him to is his role in Twister as the
as Dusty.
Oh, Dusty, yeah.
Yeah, the kind of the
that's no moon. That's a space station.
I've always loved that character, and I've always kind of, anything I've watched him in, I mean, until recently, but I mean, for the longest time after Twister, he was always, oh, that's that guy from Twister. That's that guy from Twister. And I guess that added in the fact that he looked like a close friend of mine that we used to tease, hey, you're that guy from Twister. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the one that sticks out to me a lot. And I mean, and I just, you know, he is going to be missed. He is was a fantastic actor and brought a lot to just about every movie he did. But yeah, Twister is the one that stood out to me.
Justin?
Oh, we played it last week. I mean, Mission Impossible 3, when he actually, I had never seen him play an out and out villain before. I'd always known him as a fun, you know, a more comedic actor. He'd take it definitely some dramatic turns, but never anything on the level of the villainy that he played in Owen Davian. So to see him do that and I think really elevate the entire film just with his presence was really remarkable. And whenever I see his face, that's a character I think of.
Scotty?
For me, it's one of the first movies I ever saw with him, which is probably not a popular choice, but Magnolia, which is a movie.
It's a fucking awesome movie.
I love that movie, and it's one of those movies that I love it, and I don't know why.
Respect the cock.
Yeah. But he plays the role in that movie where he's he's basically the caregiver or the mm-hmm. nurse to the old guy that's dying, and he makes a connection between the guy you were just referring to and this dying man. And the range of emotion he goes in that one role really kind of, to me, showcases his range of ability as an actor over all of his career. Like Justin said, he played mm-hmm. a villain in that movie. He played the comedic stuff like Brian said in Twister. He had such a range. And I saw a lot of that just in Magnolia. I mean, just to the point where you just felt like crying with him mm-hmm. towards the end of that. And I really enjoyed his performance.
Well, my runner-up would be Mission Impossible 3. So, Justin, excellent pick. But Pirate Radio, if nobody's ever seen it.
Oh, so good.
I highly recommend you go check that out. It's one of those movies where I'm not going to just even describe what the plot is. Just go find Pirate Radio and watch it. And I think that's his best performance. Notice none of us said Capote. So yeah. I want to know how many people. I personally think that's one of the most overrated performances in Oscar.
I never saw it.
Oh, it was so grating. Just grating. And it wasn't him personally. I mean, I know that's how the guy talked, but damn, man. It was 2 hours of that voice will just put you in a freaking mm-hmm. coma.
Pirate Radio.
Yeah, I feel here after 3 hours with you.
Pirate Radio is on Netflix too, by the way.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. So see, you can watch it for free. And then watch Arrow, because I'm addicted to it.
And so is Man of Tai Chi.
Oh, yes. Ooh. Justin's and Brian's recommendations there.
Man of and Tai so Chi. Is Cockneys versus Zombies, but just saying.
That's a thing.
Well, that's our Philip Seymour Hoffman retrospective and Netflix edition.
And just for the record, Philip Seymour Hoffman is not in Cockneys versus Zombies, just saying.
But he should have been.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. Just how many ways are there to die in the West? Apparently, there are a million. A Million Ways to Die in the West is the latest one from Seth MacFarlane. He plays a kind of a cowardly farmer who falls for the hot new woman in town, but unfortunately she's married to the gunslinger who happens to roll into town also. And of course, as the gunslinger and the coward guy always end up butting heads. So she teaches him how to be his own gunslinger. So we've got a lot of people in this one that you probably wouldn't expect from a Seth MacFarlane movie, but Amanda Seyfried, Liam Neeson, Charlize Theron, Neil Patrick Harris, Sarah Silverman, Giovanni Ribisi, a number of other people that you probably recognize their faces more than their names. I'm sorry, I laughed my fucking ass off at this.
Mila Kunis.
What'd you think, Aaron?
I didn't like. I thought Ted is one of those movies where it's hysterical for about half of the movie, and the other half sucked. So when I saw the trailer, I didn't want to see the trailer. I really had no interest. I'm like, yeah, I got it. You're going to do the same jokes you do on Family Guy. I laughed my ass off. I think this movie looks hysterical. And Sarah Silverman, even though her voice annoys me, she is so funny in the trailer. I almost cried. And so is Charlize Theron. And by the way, just a little fun fact, she's bald in this movie. She's actually bald. She has to wear a wig the whole movie.
Why is she bald?
She was doing Mad Max or something. So she was getting ready to do that, so she had to wear a wig the whole time. So the whole time I'm watching this trailer, all I'm thinking of, you're bald under there.
Bald.
Bald. And that turned you on?
A little bit, yeah.
I'm like, pull my hair. Whoops.
She should have played Lex Luthor.
Touche.
Oh, man. This trailer looked like the epitome of trying way too hard for me. I laughed. Don't get me wrong.
When did you become the hater?
Dude, I'm not a hater. I watched this because you guys recommended it, and we're talking, and like you said it to us a second time, and we're like, this movie is so funny, and I hadn't seen it yet, so I went into it just expecting and the opening gag is just like so.
The ice crushing the man's skull?
Yeah.
That's just funny.
See? Just why is it so big, Smash?
It just looks like dumb humor to me. Just. And this
you're
is coming,
dumb.
And
this is coming funny.
From this is coming from the guy that can't wait to see Dumb and Dumber 2, and I think it looks dumb humor. Don't get me wrong, I laughed a couple of times in this trailer, more than a couple of times. I'm just not nearly as excited about it as you guys are.
Everybody dies in the West. Everybody. Even the caretaker is trying to kill somebody. I'm sorry, Justin, what did you think?
No, I mean, I thought it was hilarious. I laughed from almost the beginning to the end of it. I really didn't anticipate on finding it as funny as I did. I'm happily surprised and really looking forward to it.
And you normally don't even like Westerns, right?
No, I like Westerns just fine. I like some things Seth MacFarlane does. I think he can occasionally believe his own press too much.
Yeah.
But in this film, he really is, I think, knocking it out of the park.
I hope it carries over. I hope it carries over.
I do too.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's... I'm afraid it may end up like Ted because Ted was one of the more overrated comedies ever. A Million Ways to Die in the West does open May 30th later this year. We're not going to go into every one of these, but there was a lot during the Super Bowl the other day. There was a lot of trailers that popped up. Everything from Transformers 4, Muppets Most Wanted, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Captain America 2, Winter Soldier, Need for Speed. And for me personally, probably the best, I guess, the best trailer for just about all of them. And that was the one for 24, Live Another Day. I thought they did just a fabulous job of teasing it. You just see a small frame and, you know, all of a sudden you get the little tease of the tones, the 24 little countdown clock. So I thought that was great. And then you saw that about probably what, 3 or 4 times before the end of the, you know, by the end of the Super Bowl, you see the whole trailer. Yeah. Thought that was phenomenal.
They did little snippets throughout the entire telecast where you just hear the little, you know, and the whatever. And then I kept screaming because I thought that was going to be the trailer and it ended up just being a little quick clip. These sons of bitches. And then when they finally had the trailer, I squeed and told everybody to shut the F up at my Super Bowl party.
You did.
I did. Scott knows. And then his brother tried to slam the trailer, and I promptly told him to get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah, seeing Jack and Chloe together, even my wife and I just kind of looked at each other like, ooh, it's coming.
Yeah, see, ooh, I'm still pumped.
But I got to say, for me personally, this It List begins and ends with Winter Soldier. That trailer kicked my ass. That film has shot up to damn near my most anticipated movie of the year. It looks so good.
It does look
in
good.
In every fucking respect. It so far, I mean, the guys at, was it Universal? No, Marvel.
Why would you think Universal?
Because they did one of the earlier Marvel movies before it went all Disney. But anyway, the people in charge of these Captain America movies have loved what the directors did so much from the second film that they've already rehired them to do the next film. So I think their confidence in what these guys have done and what I've seen in these trailers, I could not be more excited to see Captain America 2.
I actually agree with Justin. You guys know I wasn't a big fan of the first Captain
America. You're not agreeing
about
the Universal thing, right? Because you're wrong. All right.
I wasn't a big fan of the first Captain America movie, and this trailer makes me want to go back and give it another shot because I really want to get into it. That trailer looks – and I'm not attached to the characters. I haven't read the comics like you guys. There's something about that trailer that just made me want to go see it right now.
I'd say that one probably got the most talking on the internet. Now, I'm really surprised, Justin, Brian, neither one of you said Transformers Age of Extinction.
Well, I was about to give that one a honorable mention because – that looked good. It looked like a lot more gritty. Maybe the absence of Shia LaBeouf helps that out. I don't know, but it looked the robots looked a little sleeker, a little grittier, edgier, or something. I don't know.
Now it looks great. Unfortunately, it irritated the shit out of me because I never saw as much as I wanted to see. And I guess that's a good thing because it definitely makes me want to come back for more. But I'm a little curious, though, about their Dinobot designs because the one at the end that everybody says is Grimlock, you know, the Tyrannosaurus Rex, I thought he was a dragon because he had these big horns off of his head.
Yeah, I thought he was a dragon, too.
The Pterodactyl Dinobot, I cannot believe I don't remember his name. Looked like he had two heads. So I'm really curious what they're doing with the Dinobots. But that said, they did look really, really good for the flashy little bits I got to see them. I need to see more.
I got to tell you, I was kind of overall a little disappointed, but the trailers lived up to everything. I mean, the game and the rest of the commercials kind of sucked, but every trailer was pretty good. Even the Muppets trailer.
Do you feel like the day of the Super Bowl commercial is kind of gone?
No, last year was pretty good.
Yeah, last year was good. I just think it was an off year. But I also,
maybe
it was an off game too. So
wait till 2016 though.
Why?
Oh, when there's a Star Wars trailer. Oh my god.
You might actually watch the Super Bowl?
No, I watched the Super Bowl. I watched the whole damn thing.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you never watched the game, Justin.
That's a good excuse to kick back and eat some nachos and just gotta surf the net in between bad commercials. I had no dogs in this fight, so I didn't feel pained watching it as I usually do with my Cowboys. They're snatching defeat from the jaws of victory once again.
I did like the Tim Tebow commercials. I thought
those
were pretty
funny. The Tim Tebow commercials, I laughed my ass off.
They were pretty funny.
And the Radio Shack ad. The 80s Radio Shack ad.
Oh, that was pretty good, yeah.
The 80s called, they want their store back.
They actually got who was the gymnast?
Mary Lou Retton?
Yeah, Mary Lou Retton.
She looks the same.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, well,
they all look the same.
Yeah.
And that weird wig she was wearing?
Yeah. Yeah. She probably doesn't have any. She's probably doing Mad Max too. Is that what you're saying?
Is that the one that was in Scrooged?
Who?
Yes.
God bless us, everyone.
Oh, yes.
It's Tiny Tim? No. Oh. Yeah, it was. She played Tiny Tim.
All of these trailers you can check out at thehollywoodoutsider.com. And if you got anything you want us to talk about, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
You didn't sound like you were so sure about it.
You can edit that fucking pause out, dickhead. I'm reading here. You can leave us a message at 818-81-IMAHO. That's 818-814-6246. Reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And, of course, you can tweet us at @H_outsider.
I'm leaving it in, just so you know. All right, the big screen.
Is that what you tell your wife?
That's That's where we review any new releases. It has been a very weak January. Shut up. February, whatever month we're in. I can't even remember anymore, jackass. I saw That Awkward Moment. And That Awkward Moment is about three best friends that are going through various relationship changes who all are at the crux of that question. Where is this all going? Oh, it's so romantic. Zac Efron plays Jason. He's a fun-loving and eternally single guy who meets the one girl, and Imogen Poots is her name, that he realizes could possibly change him. And that's the girl from Fright Night. You guys remember Fright Night? Mm. She was the girlfriend in Fright Night. Mm. Michael B. Justin? That was creepy. Mm-hmm. Michael B. Jordan, not Michael Jordan. He plays Mikey. Yeah, that's not funny. Whose wife just left him for Morris Chestnut. And actually, it's really funny because he says, she left me for a lawyer that looks like Morris Chestnut. It's actually Morris Chestnut.
Who's Morris Chestnut?
Really? He's an actor.
Okay.
Look, Google him. But his wife left him, and now he's in like this constant state of wanting his wife back. And he just wants to know, where did it all go wrong? Miles Teller, he plays Daniel. He's a jokey, ridiculous friend who finally realizes that his friend Chelsea was always the right one for him. And, you know, she was there in front of him the whole time. Yeah. Really? That's pretty much it. Yeah, well, you nailed it. That's the review. All three of these guys are in various stages of romantic woes, and the movie's totally Sex in the City for dudes. That's really what it's trying to be. And that's not a compliment. It's not a sharp. I actually think Sex in the City is a lot funnier.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just okay. It's not a terribly clever movie, but there are a couple of really funny moments, like Rock Out with Your Cock Out, if you've seen the movie. That's hysterical. He shows up at a dinner party thinking it's a costume party, and he's wearing Rock Out with Your Cock Out, and he's got a giant dildo hanging.
Mm.
Yeah, funny. I think the friendship between these guys works. The relationships are believable enough. It doesn't offer anything new. But I will say, Brian, that I will actually take back what I said about Zac Efron before. I actually think he does have talent, and he impressed the crap out of me. I think in a better movie, this guy would rock. So I constantly have given him crap and said that he sucks. I do think he has talent, and I want to see him in more stuff. So, unfortunately, the movie is average at best, boring at worst. It's definitely a wait-for-rental type. If $10 is the full price of admission, That Awkward Moment is worth $5.
Hmm.
And that's just because there are some funny scenes.
He's got that comedy coming up with Seth Rogen.
Neighbors?
That looks great.
He's really the best thing about the movie. I mean, he's really funny. And there's actually a moment at the end where he does the obligatory, I'm going to win her back with my long speech monologue that, you know, Justin would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
Only this guy does it with a little bit of heart. And it is really good. It's very impressive. And I actually started to feel for him. I'm like, oh, poor Zac Efron.
Is it You Complete Me good?
It's better.
Oh, fuck.
No, it's not. It's good, though. He delivers it fine. It's actually very good for that kind of monologue. Box office. China set a single day box office record of $41 million. They are starting to catch up to us. Just so you know, they're going to own us within 5 years. I'm putting it out there. You're going to hear Mandarin on the Hollywood Outsider podcast within the next 5 years. It's going
to
happen.
I thought all their money went to their socialist overlords.
Well, it goes to the theater, which in turn goes to a guy on a bicycle who takes it to the overlord.
Okay.
Number one at the U.S. box office, where there's very little money left. Right Along, $12 million for a $92.6 million total.
Is a hit.
It's going to have a sequel.
Wow.
Frozen, number two, with $8.9 million. It's still hanging in there.
Jesus.
Exactly. It just won't go away. $359.6 million. That Awkward Moment. It was very uncomfortable. $8.7 million. Huge flop. It's not going to get a sequel. Thank God.
It's made money.
The Nut Job went balls up, $7.2 million, $49.9 million. And Lone Survivor is dead on arrival. No, it's not. It's actually a huge hit. $7.7 million. I just didn't have a better pun for it. $104 million total. Now, that one would normally get a sequel, but I hate to tell you, it's not going to have one.
Lone Survivor 2?
Lone Survivor 2. Guess what? They all made it. And Labor Day opened in 7th. That's right, 7th place. Probably because they opened it in February. But it made $5.1 million, total flop. I feel really bad for Josh Brolin. He has had one bad year at the theater. Sorry. Old boy.
All right, folks, we have got four films that we're going to be talking about this week. The first one opens up on February 12th, the other three, the 14th. first up, and really, I think we're bringing out the heavy guns right off the bat. Fucking RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, RoboCop, the film, the reboot that everybody poo-pooed when it got started. It's about to come out, and I could not be more excited. If you need to know what it's about, get out from under your rock. But I'll give you a very brief synopsis. In 2028 Detroit, when Alex Murphy, a loving husband, father, and good cop, is critically injured in the line of duty, the multinational conglomerate Omnicorp sees their chance for a part man, part robot police officer. And this one's directed by Jose Padilla, and it stars Joel Kinnaman as RoboCop slash Alex Murphy. And I actually just heard, not to pimp another podcast, but I just heard him on The Nerdist. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea the guy was Swedish.
Really?
Yeah, he's...
Does he talk like this?
No, he actually does. He talks like he does in
Toaster Strudel.
And the trailers for RoboCop, he talks the same way. His father's American, but they moved to Sweden when he was about like 8 years old.
Neither and I are coming with me.
Now you're sounding like a bad jaboob.
That was like a leprechaun. What are you doing?
What? I thought he should be fronting a convenience store. Anyway.
Thank you. Come again.
The first Pakistani leprechaun.
That's right. Anyway, the guy sounds really interesting. And hearing the interview, it made me more excited for the movie. But it's also got Gary Oldman, Michael Keaton, Abby Cornish, Jackie Earle Haley. The list goes on. Samuel L. motherfucking Jackson's in it. I could not be more excited for this reboot. It's one of the few remakes that looks like it could better the original. But I got to ask, Brian, what say you on this? Are you ready to get in the line of duty with RoboCop?
Drop it. Yeah, absolutely, man. This is actually the more I watch the trailers, the more excited I get. And I like the look of it, like that darker kind of militaristic look he's got going on instead of just this lumbering pile of metal. It just
with a toaster on his head.
Yeah. It's just, I think, yeah, I'm really excited. Like I say, with the cast that's involved with this, it just looks fantastic. I'm really pumped for this. I'm a lot more excited than I actually expected to be.
And I want to point out how many people were trashing this movie based on that first trailer and when it was announced and everything else. It's just...
Well, even when pictures would come out from, you know, these guys 100 yards away taking pictures of him walking in the back lot in his RoboCop suit, people all over the net were just like, oh my God, he looks like shit, blah, blah, blah. This movie's going to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
People fucking like to be asses. Negative. I am.
Speaking of which, Scotty.
I'm super stoked for this movie. I've been looking for an excuse to try drive the hour and a half to our closest real IMAX, and this is going to be the one for me.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I was excited about this one before the good reviews happened. I've been excited for this one since we first started talking about it last year. I can't wait. And like Brian said, the more I see the trailers and the newer trailers, I am on board. I cannot wait to see this movie.
Who saw this when it first came out?
Hmm?
Who saw this on our show? Who saw the original when it first came out?
Oh, I did when it hit theaters. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Did you, Scott?
I was probably in diapers, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably right. Still in utero.
I probably hadn't banged your mom yet.
Wow. All right, well.
How many times?
That's an in-joke nobody gets.
Before you realize.
Now, you guys don't even get the joke. Brian. I feel so bad. I love in-jokes, but unfortunately, you'll never get that. When you saw this one originally, you know, horribly violent, just disgustingly violent. Justin, you remember that too. It was one of the most violent movies of that time. This one's PG-13. Does that bother either one of you?
Not really. PG-13 is just as violent as just about any R movie. It just doesn't show the actual acts, you know, being... landing in somebody's head. It's just more, it cuts away at the last second. There won't be as much blood splattered against a wall that somebody, RoboCop shoots somebody. So there will be some cringing moments, I'm pretty sure. But I think for the most part, it'll be like watching Wolverine. Wolverine was very violent, but you didn't see much blood unless you saw Wolverine's skin moving back over it, you know, closing up. So,
well, and the whole reason, you know, for the first film was that Paul Verhoeven wanted to do a movie that spoke to the excessive violence in American cinema. And that's why he made RoboCop as violent and gory as he did. That's not the theme that they're exploring, though, in this RoboCop. This one is more about man and machine and who are we when we integrate those two things together. Who's really in control? Where does a human go in that mix? So I don't need excessive gore in a film like that. As long as he's shooting and people are getting blowed up, I'm fine.
Sounds good to me. I'm in.
And it seems like the difference between R and PG-13 these days isn't really violence so much as it is language. Mm-hmm. From every filmmaker I hear talk about what they remove to get a rating changed. It's usually too many fucks and whatnot. All right, well, folks, we have got a trio of love stories for you. If you're ready for a little Valentine's Day action, Hollywood's hoping they've got the movie just for you. First up, Endless Love. Yes, another remake. RoboCop ain't the only one. Now, this is a romantic drama directed by Shayna Feist. It's a remake of Franco Zeffirelli's 1981 film of the same name, and it actually makes this the second adaptation of Scott Spencer's novel of the first of Endless Love. The cast includes Alex Pettyfer, Gabrielle Wilde, Robert Patrick, Bruce Greenwood. Aaron, you are a man of great passion.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine that you and the missus won't be ready to get some Endless Love on.
Of the three romantic films that are coming out at this time, this is the one I least want to see. I saw the original. It was decent. Brooke Shields was naked a lot. That's really all it had going for it.
Hi.
Yeah. Am I wrong? I mean, that's really what the original had going for it. It wasn't it wasn't a good movie. Why remake that one? I have no idea, but...
Was the song used in that one?
Yeah. My endless love. I was in there. It wasn't worth seeing just to hear that. That was on the radio every 15 minutes. It's just not a movie I want to see again. I don't want to relive it. Brooke Shields, you look great. Good for you. This person, I don't care about her. I don't care about Alex Pettyfer. I'm just not interested.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. What about you, Scotty?
I didn't even know it was a remake. Never heard the original story.
You were in diapers.
Well, it was.
I literally
81,
was. It was 81, so I literally was in diapers. This is, of the three, I have least interest for this one as well. Just nothing does it for me whatsoever. It just seems like, obviously it has been done, but I mean, this seems like that kind of story about guy falls for girl and tries to, she's rebelling against her parents and dad doesn't want her to be with him, and I don't
when you watch the original, it feels endless because it never ends. It just never ends. So awful.
Brian, you got an opinion to share on this?
Are we still talking about this?
All right. About last night, yet another fucking remake. That makes three, folks, if you're counting at home. Now, this is a romantic comedy starring Kevin Hart, Michael Ealy, Regina Hall, and Joy Brent. It's directed by Steve Pink. The film's based on the 1974 David Mamet play called Sexual Perversity in Chicago, which ended up being a movie called About Last Night in 1986. Here it is, 2014. We're getting a remake, but this time featuring an all-black cast, and the film is now set in Los Angeles. The official synopsis for the picture is that a modern reimagining of a classic romantic comedy, this contemporary version closely follows new love for two couples as they journey from the bar to the bedroom and eventually put to the test in the real world. Scotty, any interest at all? I know you haven't seen the play. You probably haven't seen the original film.
Mm-mm.
You want to see this one?
No,
I'm not getting a lot of love here.
I might if I like Kevin Hart as much as you guys did, but I'm just not. He doesn't do anything for me. He's one of those that I like in small doses. But if he's going to be at the forefront of this movie, I and it just doesn't. The story doesn't do anything for me.
I'm all about it.
Really?
I want to see it. Yeah.
You're about Last Night?
I am all about Last Night. I definitely want to see it. The more and more that I've seen the trailers, it's starting to grow on me. I think Kevin Hart impressed me in Ride Along because he was able to simmer down all the screaming and yelling that I thought he was going to do. Through, I thought he was going to be Chris Tucker the whole movie, and he wasn't. He could actually do Reserved. So I think he can pull it off. And I really like, is it Michael Ealy? Is that his name? The guy from Almost Human?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I really like him. I think he's a really charismatic guy, very talented. Yeah, I said charismatic bitch. He is. I can't help it. Think of a better word for it. Give me a synonym. I just want to see it. I didn't like the original, though. I really didn't. You know, Rob Lowe, the thespian Rob Lowe, doesn't really do anything for me. Demi Moore was gorgeous. That's all I remember about that movie. So I want to see it. It looks funny. Can't wait to check it out.
Are we still talking about this movie?
All right. Well, we're going to move on to the last
of our
films.
I think we need more romantic people on this podcast. That's what I'm thinking.
Apparently, I just got a bunch of haters.
I think you should suck a bag of dicks.
That's love. That's fucking Jesus. Love right there.
All right,
suck
Brian.
A bag of dicks. All right. I think of all three of our little romantic Valentine's Day weekend movies, this one might perhaps be the one that finally evokes some love from you guys. Winter's Tale. It's actually released in the United Kingdom as A New York Winter's Tale. Is a supernatural romance based on the 1983 novel by Mark Helprin. The film is written and directed by Akiva Goldsman and stars Colin Farrell, Jessica Brown Findlay, Jennifer Connelly, Russell Crowe, and Will Smith. Set in 1916 in present-day Manhattan, Winter's Tale follows the story of Peter Lake, a thief who falls in love with Beverly Penn, a dying girl who has tuberculosis and occupies one of the houses he breaks into. Lake is saved from the insane Irish gangster Pearl Soames and his henchmen by Ethansor. That's a weird one to pronounce, which is a mysterious white horse who becomes his guardian angel.
Hmm.
Brian, please show me some love.
Are we still talking about this one?
Wow. You have a cold black heart, my friend. No romance.
Look, I'm sorry. You got RoboCop going against all this. I'm sorry. RoboCop is just, yeah, I can't even focus on. Even if this is the only movie, I would probably have to pick About Last Night over this one if I had to just go with the romantic stuff. This movie,
the romantic stuff.
The premise of this, it just looks absolutely atrocious. This looks absolutely just dumb. D-U-M-M-M, dumb.
I completely disagree with you, Brian.
Thank you.
This is – now, I will say the way that Justin just described it makes it sound way more floofy than the trailer does. The trailer is one of the most interesting trailers I've seen in a long time because the first half, it feels like a completely different movie than the second half does. Mm-hmm. And I really want to see – it's Colin Farrell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Colin Farrell. I'm looking forward to seeing his performance in this. And I got more excited from seeing it because of his performance in Saving Mr. Banks.
I see. Yeah.
Which was incredible. And I kind of sat up and went, okay, wow, this guy really can act. And some of the emotion that I see in his face in this movie, coupled with the supernatural aspect of it, I am on board for this one. I think it looks really good.
What I will say, and this kind of goes to what Scott's saying, what I have found over the course of his career is Colin Farrell is one of those actors who is great when he's a supporting actor.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a great leading man. I'm hoping this is the movie that changes it because the plot is really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I think Brian just hates love, really, is what
he
I'm
does.
Getting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, love hater.
I'm all about love. I love love.
You love 1 minute clips on YouTube. That's what you love. What I think is the movie looks interesting. The plot looks entertaining. I'm leery because of Colin Farrell. That's really my biggest hesitation, just because of his history. I haven't seen anything where he's been a leading man, and I'm like, damn, that was good. But I've seen a lot where he was a supporting character and thought, wow, that mm-hmm. was great. So if this is the role that finally catapults him, I'm all for it.
I do wish Colin Farrell would take more risks with the roles that he's given. I happen to be a fan of Colin Farrell. I I really can't think of any role he did that I just absolutely did not like.
Alexander?
Oh, God. He's gotcha. You had to bring that movie up, didn't you?
He's gotcha.
Okay, all right, yeah, okay. That movie was a piece of shit.
Yeah, everybody's got one.
On every level, but other than that, I really like him, and I feel like I'm one of the few people in the world who actually gives him the benefit of the doubt. So with Winter's Tale, I like the cast. I like the story. I am much more interested in seeing it than I am the other two. But this isn't just these three. It's a four-film fight, folks.
Here, Justin, here's what I think you should do. My suggestion is that you just give the RoboCop assumption to us all and make us pick from the love movies.
All right. You know what? You're absolutely right. Yeah. We would all pick RoboCop. That's a given.
Yes.
Let's get it on. Of these three romantic films, though, which one, Brian, even if you had to be dragged kicking and screaming, which one would you like to see?
About Last Night, because at least I've got a chance to laugh.
Fair enough. Aaron?
About Last Night, definitely.
Scotty?
Winter's Tale.
I gotta go Winter's Tale as well. So, because I'm the one doing this, we win.
Great logic. Really. Great
RoboCop
logic.
RoboCop wins.
RoboCop is the, they cross the board.
Now, don't we wish RoboCop maybe had a little romance?
Maybe
no,
he does.
No, fuck it. Shoot that shit.
Is he gonna fuck a garbage can?
R2-D2.
All right. Well, you can listen and subscribe on iTunes, your Stitcher radio app.
I mean, just think about the attachments of RoboDick.
We're way too pornographic. I apologize to all the children listening. This has been a raunchy one.
If your children are listening, blame your parents.
You can always listen through our, I forgot what we do. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, RSS feed on thehollywoodoutsider.com, all that stuff. There's a new episode every Thursday.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Next week, we'll give you a proper host shout out. Last week's answer was Scott's, and it was Office Space. A lot of people got it wrong.
What?
Those that got it right. Yeah.
I'm so shocked that not that many people got that right.
Those that got it right. Sean McDonald, Zach Parkerson, Marcus Shelton, Sabrina Elkins, and Pablo Meza. Congratulations, guys. That was fantastic.
Now, I picked an easy one, right? Come on.
You picked great. You all picked. Right. I think some people thought it was with different movies. Along Came Polly was one of ones. Them. Somebody said Along Came Polly, and I'm like, maybe you're just stuck on Philip Seymour Hoffman this week. Because
but there was one. Yeah, the Michael Bolton line was the dead giveaway.
I thought so too.
Yeah, the ass clown. Yeah. That was the first time I've ever heard that term.
I had never heard it either before.
No talent ass clown.
Even when Scott tries to make it easy, it's too hard. That's just the way it goes. Mm-hmm. This week it is my Jesus. It's my turn.
You just step in it every time, don't you?
If you think you know what the clip is, email. I'm really sorry. If this is the first time you listen to this show, it's not always this dirty, I promise you. Listen to my clip. Here it is.
You're sick. No. Shut up! Shut the fuck up!
You have no right to take me.
Shut up! Will you? Shut up! Shut up! Shut! Shut up! Shut up! Now! Are you threatening me, Dick?
Aren't you? You go fuck yourself!
Oi! Fuck! Did you just say go fuck myself?
Yes, I did.
That wasn't good! You're dead!
All right, that's your clip. And apparently some people are saying it's really hard. I don't think it is. I have faith in our audience. Now let's go to the couch where we talk about TV and home video news. Jay Leno is wrapping it up. He's done again. Are we finally glad that he's gone again?
I got no dog in the fight. I mean, whether the guy wants to stay or wants to go, if they, you know, the powers that be want him gone, I don't give a shit. I'm just glad finally somebody put their foot down and said, this is it. It's done. And he's out of here. I felt bad for Conan back in the day. But now Jimmy Fallon's getting the spot. I can understand why they're doing it. Get a younger, fresh face in there. So, fine. Just don't come back a third time.
Yeah, he will.
Can he come back?
Nah, he won't. He
no,
won't
this
be
is
back.
A corporate.
No, this is final. There's no way he's coming back at this point. They've already got, like, say, Fallon coming in. You've got Seth Meyers from who's been on SNL for the last, like the head writer for like the last 10 or 12 years. I think he's taken over Jimmy Fallon's spot. I mean, it's out with the old, in with the new. It's, you know, it's definitely growing younger. He's out for good this time. There's no, you know, shit or get off the pot type of thing going on.
I like Jimmy Fallon.
Do you guys think he's a worthy successor? Like, he's the guy that can take the mantle?
I think he's absolutely as good as anybody else out there.
Do you think he's better than Conan would have been? If you would have...
Yes.
I do.
Yeah.
And I like Conan. But the stuff that he's doing, he comes up with clever stuff. Every week, there's something that's just like... He's musically inclined. He can sing.
Slow jam the news.
Slow jam the news.
That is one of the funniest bits I've seen in a long time. Slow jam the news.
Oh yeah.
When he got Obama to come up there and do, oh shit, that was funny.
All right.
Him and Brian Williams. Oh, did you guys see? By the way,
we're classic.
Did you see the final episode of Late Night?
I see what you did there, Brian.
Oh, Late Night.
I see what you did there.
Nobody else was fucking listening.
What'd you say, Scott?
The final episode of Late Night, like his like farewell. Mm-hmm. Fallon's farewell to the Late Night Show. He did this one bit where he did a reunion of all the cast from Full House, and it was hilarious. They had Uncle Jesse and John Stamos, Bob Saget, and Dave Coulier all came on. It was like they were tucking him into bed because he was scared, and they did the cheesy sad violin music. If you can find it on YouTube, it's really funny, and it was cool because they're both, you know, NBC, so. Mm-hmm. They couldn't make the digs, but they still kind of did a little bit with Leno. So it's worth checking out.
Well, other news, House of Cards season 3 is going to come. They did approve the renewal early before it's even out on Netflix. It comes out on Valentine's Day. Nothing says love like duplicitous politics. And also my favorite show.
Season 2 starts.
Yeah. Season 2 starts, and it got renewed early prior to Season 2 starting.
Right, you didn't mention Season 2, you just mentioned Season 3.
Shut up, let's get back to the most important part. My favorite show on television just got the final, the axe, so to speak. Its final episode of Psych is going to air on March 26th, and that includes, I like it more than Game of Thrones, I like it more than Justified. It's my favorite show on television. It's the only show on TV that's ever made me laugh every single episode, even the bad ones, so... I even wrote up a goodbye to it on the website. So please go read it if you're a fan. But Scott, are you happy about either one of these? You better not say you're happy about Psych, because I will fucking punt you right in the balls.
I don't love or hate Psych. I'm not going to get into that debate. I watched the first season and really enjoyed it, and I was just kind of tired of it by the second season.
Okay, well, let's move on from that then.
House of Cards. I didn't finish the season. I need to go back and watch.
Seriously?
That. Yeah. Oh
my God.
Well, I'm addicted to Sons of Anarchy right now. I'm trying to get caught up on one show.
Yeah, but House of Cards came out a year ago.
Yeah, and
there's only 13 episodes.
Yes, I know.
Just say I don't like the show. It's okay.
No, I really did like the show, but
I have a hard time believing you right now.
I'm not as into politics as you are, but I did enjoy it. I liked the talking to the camera, that kind of thing, but. In all seriousness,
you sound like you're really behind it. I like the talking to the camera shit. That's pretty good, clever shit.
I'm more
Jose. He's pretty cool. I like him.
The bigger thing I'm excited about this is that this Netflix TV show thing mm-hmm. is becoming a thing.
Yeah.
To me, that is the bigger thing I'm excited for. I love the idea of being able to sit down and watch an entire show right off the bat.
I think that's going to change. I don't think they keep doing that. At some point,
no,
I think
they are. They've Variety.com has got an article about how they're going $400 million in debt to produce original programming.
No, I'm not saying that they're not going to do the TV shows. They're going to start staggering, I think, at some point. I think that you have to. You have to build up conversation about your shows. I think when you dump them all one day and they're out there and everybody can watch the 13 episodes, I think people talk about them for a couple weeks and it's done.
Opinion. House of Cards has been talked about for a long time.
Just my opinion.
And not everybody watches it all in one sitting or right back to back. They watch it at their own pace.
No, you watch it at your own pace. Most people I know watch it when it's on, as soon as it drops.
That's their own pace.
Yeah, okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, I can't really argue that. Touché. Touche. Well, we'll see what happens. I personally think that at some point they're going to have to stagger these and release them every week or something. I just think, how do you get a water cooler show if you dump everything in one day? I just don't see the possibility of it there. And that's really how you build word of mouth, is water cooler. You get moments, keep people talking, and you go and you tell your friends.
Do people really still talk around the water cooler?
Yeah, not literally around the water cooler, but on the internet boards, Facebook.
But I still think, I don't think anybody's watching the all 13 episodes in one night. They're watching two or three episodes, four tops, and going, you know, when they go to work the next day, they're like, man, you know, Netflix has got this new show. It's pretty good. You ought to check it out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like say, you know, that's person A, person B checks it out. Maybe not that night, but maybe, you know, a couple of days later. I actually kind of agree with both sides here. I mean, I totally see your point, Aaron. And to a certain extent, I agree with you that, you know, you want to generate traffic. You want to bring people into Netflix.com or whatever app or device they're using to watch it. And if, you know, to do that, hey, to guarantee that, well, let's stagger out these 13 episodes to one a week or one every, at least every few days. But the other side is it's such a unique, kind of twist on everything that it just, I don't know. It may work.
All right. Well, we'll find out over the scheme of things, but really most importantly, psych, it's ending. All right, let's go to DVD and Blu-ray, Scott.
February 11th, we got six releases. The first is The Best Man Holiday. We talked about that on episode 199, where Aaron gave it an 850.
I loved it.
You loved it? Mm-hmm. He did not love The Counselor, which
I did
he gave,
not love it.
Gave it 350 in a written review, which we talked about on episode 116.
And worst movie of the year. That was my pick for worst movie of the year.
Was it really? I didn't mm-hmm. remember that. Wow. Yep. Is that bad? Mm-hmm. Nothing below a 350 for you all year?
I thought that was generous. I was being nice. And that's only because of the actors involved. The movie itself sucked. Ashley, if you're listening, you know I'm right.
Aaron and I both saw, actually, I'm pretty sure Justin saw it as well, Ender's Game, episode 117. Mm-hmm. What was your score, Justin? Do you remember?
I think it was probably about a 6 or 7.
6 or 7. Aaron gave it a 750. I gave it a 7. We had three movies that we did not, none of us saw, but the first is All Is Lost. The premise here is after a collision with a shipping container at sea, a resourceful sailor finds himself, despite all efforts to the contrary, staring his mortality in the face. This one stars Robert Redford and was actually nominated for an Oscar for sound editing. So
doesn't he like not say a word the whole movie?
Yeah, it's just him, I think, for the whole movie too.
Hmm, like a Castaway kind of thing.
I think it's
no Wilson.
Yeah.
Next up is Blue Is the Warmest Color. This is a French film.
I want to see this.
It's the main
Ashley
character
just perked up.
Adele's life has changed when she meets Emma, a young woman with blue hair who will allow her to discover desire, to assert herself as a woman and as an adult. In front of others, Adele grows, seeks herself, loses herself, finds herself.
Yeah,
by the way,
does.
This movie's 3 hours long, by the way.
Is it that long?
Yes.
Okay, that's a lot of lesbian sex.
That's a lot of lesbians.
That's a lot of Jergens.
Jesus, Brian!
And lastly,
I got a Kleenex for that.
Lastly, How I Live Now. This is about an American girl who's sent to the English countryside to stay with relatives. She finds love and purpose while fighting for her survival as war envelops the world around her.
I want to see that too, jackass. Stop making fun of it.
I just didn't like the way that premise was written. They should have written my own. So, and with that, we'll move on to our Recasting the Classic segment. This is where once every other week or so, one of us hoes gives to one of the other hoes a classic film with the task of recasting it as if it were being made into a current movie and using current actors. Last time we did it, Aaron was given Army of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, buddy.
I actually had Ash picked out right after, like, the same day. So I hope everybody knows that I already picked this guy. But he wanted me to recast Ash, which was Bruce fucking Campbell. That's actually his legal name. Sheila, who played, Give Me Some Sugar, Baby. Lord Arthur. Are all men loudmouth braggarts like you, that guy. And Duke Henry the Red. First one was Duke Henry the Red. I thought that was the easiest. You just need somebody who's fun and looks like an old Scottish guy. I picked Jared Harris, who played, what was he on? I think he was on Downton Abbey. He was also in Sherlock Holmes. He was Moriarty in Sherlock Holmes.
Hmm. Game of Shadows? Fringe. Yeah.
Was he on Fringe? I didn't know that. I don't watch
Mad Men. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's on Mad Men. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think
he's a very talented actor.
Haven't watched Fringe.
Sorry.
You watch that psych shit.
Oh, you shut your whore mouth, son. I'm just telling you right now, I will give you a spanking. Lord Arthur, Taylor Kitsch, because I want to see him in that kind of role. I think Taylor can bring just the right amount of a little too serious and also that little hint of cheese.
I think sure, he's killed a couple of other franchises. Why not that one?
Sheila, I mean, really, she really didn't bring much to the role. I mean, and Beth Davids was fine, but this isn't a movie that really only one actor mattered in the entire film. But
apparently,
you know, we got to have four. So there you go. I picked Emilia Clarke because I think she looks the part and she already has the accent. Saves me some time.
Wait, the girl from Lost?
No,
Emilia Clarke, Game of Thrones. From Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Played Daenerys.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And for Ash, and I swear to God, I already had this picked out, so it's not because my show's ending. James Rhodey, who's the lead on Psych. I just think he's the right element of cheese. He can pull off the, I think I'm more macho than I really am. He's just the only guy I could picture doing it, really, outside of Nathan Fillion, who is just too old and fat to do it anymore. You need to lose some of that castle weight. All right, well, Scott, it is your turn. So I'm giving you a movie in honor of Valentine's Day, the most romantic film I could possibly think of for you to recast.
Great.
So in 2 weeks, I want you to come back and recast Predator. You need to recast Dutch, who's played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dylan, who is played by Carl Weathers. This is the biggest bromance of all time, I'm telling you. Mac, who is played by Bill Duke, and
I got time to bleed.
Blaine, who is played by none other than Jesse the Body Ventura. When I think man, I think Scott Clark. So I think you should cast this.
All you got to do is find like just muscly dudes, and
I think you should recast with little chicks.
Yeah,
of course you do.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, like you say, just go to the bar that you hang out every weekend and just pick out a few.
I want Hank. I want Steve. Ooh, definitely Steve. All right, let's go to From the Outside In, where we talk about a topic that's on ours or our listeners' minds. Scott's still laughing because he's like, shit, they saw me at the bar.
Well, when you said romantic movies, I thought, oh, he's going to pick out When Harry Met Sally, and I'm going to have to cut a bitch.
All right. Thanks to Eisenberg, Jesse Eisenberg, not Heisenberg, we once again have people going, boo, over casting choice. I really don't get the flack on that one. Affleck. We've all had those moments, whether it be over an internet rumor or truth.
He's explained his own joke and it still wasn't funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to applaud myself, too. All right. Well, we've had those moments where it's an internet rumor or it's truth, whichever it is. We look at the screen and we just scream no because it just seems disgusting to us. It's some casting choice that we just thought was awful. Just to remove the easy one, because everybody will go to it otherwise, is take Heath Ledger in Dark Knight. Very, very few wanted it. They didn't want Heath Ledger to play the Joker because, I mean, Jack Nicholson was the gold standard for that role. And, of course, there's a lot of people now that are going to say, oh, no, I was always for it. You are lying sons of bitches because nobody was for that one. It turned out that he redefined the character. He made the character his own. He was inspired casting. So I wanted to ask you guys, and we've got a couple different options on this, topics on this. What actors did you initially reject due to whatever your reasons were? Only to see their performance and just fully relieved in what they brought to the role. Justin?
This one for me was an easy one. It's Matt Damon as Jason Bourne. Never saw that coming. He was always kind of a funny character actor, some drama roles in there, but never anything that gave a clue that he could play an action star. And the first time I watched that film, I was almost on the floor with the oh my gods, because who thought he could pull that kind of stuff off? And not only did he pull it off, but he pulled it off with flair, joie de vivre. So definitely Matt Damon, never saw him coming.
I'm kind of sticking with Batman here, but going a little bit further back, but that's the Michael Keaton Batman. When he first was, you know, mentioned that he was going to be Batman / Bruce Wayne, it was like, holy cow, we're casting this comedic actor as, you know, this iconic comic book character. So there was a lot of skepticism with that. And personally, it's hard for me to think of even Christian Bale being a better Batman. So, I mean, I've always liked Michael Keaton as Batman. I thought he pulled off the Bruce Wayne aspect of it a lot better than, you know,
I'm Batman.
So I don't know. So I'd say Michael Keaton is as the Tim Burton version of Batman.
Okay. Scotty?
This is a hard one for me because I don't have as much skin in the game. I haven't seen as many movies as you guys. But for me, what stuck out was Liam Neeson, because I never really, before Taken, I never saw him in anything in an action role.
Mm-hmm. What are you laughing about?
I never took him.
Well, because he said Taken, and then I never took him.
I never thought of him as an action
Look, it's
star.
Funny in modern Justin's world, all
right? That's right.
I always thought of things like Schindler's List and comedies, like I saw him in Gunshy, which is a...
No, that's a fair point, man.
And then Taken comes out, and he just kicked ass. And, you know, if you would have said, hey, Liam Neeson's going to be in this awesome action role, I was like, what? And then he totally sold me with Taken. So
I'm really surprised nobody has honorable mentions on this one. But
because you normally don't fucking let us.
We normally don't let you.
Yeah, we normally don't let you. Because you get one, suddenly it's eight. So, you know, for time.
If I'd known it was allowed.
Well, I've got several. So jump on. Tobey Maguire and Spider-Man, I did not like that casting at all. And I still don't love it.
Still don't like it.
But he eventually convinced me that, all right, you can do it justice. And he did fine. But I absolutely hated that casting. I thought that movie was going to be just god-awful. Shut up, Brian. I like that movie. I dreaded seeing it. It's my favorite comic book character coming to life. And I'm just like, he's going to screw everything up in that movie.
Was it the emo dancing that won you over, or?
That was the first movie, Jackass, not the third one. he eventually became the shitty character I thought he was going to be in the original, in the third movie. I just really thought he did much better than I thought I gave him credit for. And the movie was fun, and it was exactly what I wanted at the time. Another big one, Jeff Bridges is Rooster Cogburn. I loathe that idea, because Rooster Cogburn was John Uckin Wayne, the original, you know, the original True Grit. To me, that's just not a role that could be redone. And definitely couldn't be redone by Jeff Bridges, you know, the fabulous baker boy. I didn't really picture him.
The dude.
Being the man. The dude. The dude's going to be a manly man? Come on, man. He was great, and he redefined that whole. I can watch both those movies and forget that they're the same story. That's how good he was in that movie. Daniel Craig, James Bond.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, you know, so many people trashed him and said, oh, how could you do that to Pierce? Poor Pierce. And didn't want him. You know, I'd seen him in Layer Cake, but he didn't strike me as James Bond. He struck me as more like a James Bond villain. So,
yeah.
So he was. And also Keanu Reeves in The Gift. That was a big one for me. Because I was a huge Sam Raimi fan. Huge Sam Raimi fan. But still not a very big Keanu Reeves fan. And that was a movie I was extremely looking forward to. A real small, low budget movie called The Gift. I think it's a great movie. And he was great in it.
He really was.
And it surprised the hell out of me because I was dreading having to watch that fucker try to act. Especially as a hillbilly bumpkin redneck wife abuser. Mm-hmm. You know, just doesn't scream, Keanu Reeves can pull this off. And he did. Surprised the hell out of me. Now, who would you say is an actor that you didn't get behind until you saw a specific performance of theirs, and now you're in their fan corner?
Jude Law. You know, when he first kind of broke onto the scene a while back, he was, I guess, one of those just pretty faces kind of guys. I never really took him seriously or what have you until I saw him in Road to Perdition.
Mm-hmm.
And just fell in love with him as an actor in that movie.
Oh, that's a good pick. I forgot about that movie. Yeah.
And also, right about the time, I can't remember if it was right before or right after, but he also did Enemy at the Gates.
Oh, so good.
Where he was the sniper, and another fantastic movie. And then I actually started taking him serious as a as an actual actor, not just, well, this guy's got a movie role because he's hot or whatever. And, you know, of course, I think at the time he was really kind of more known for, you know, romantic comedy type stuff. And even he still did a few after that. But Jude Law, I think, was one of the guys that he's really won me over. And especially the one that he's got coming up. I forget the name of the movie, but it's something like My Name's Dominic or Dominic something other. It looks hilarious.
Mine is one that I didn't necessarily have anything against him as an actor. It was more that I didn't know anything about him. And when he was going to play a role that I really liked a lot, and he kind of blew me away, was James McAvoy. I hadn't seen Wanted before that, and I saw it afterwards and just thought he was okay in it. But when he played Professor Xavier, or he wasn't a professor at that point, I guess, but Charles Xavier in X-Men First Class. Mm-hmm. He was just so charming and just – he felt like a young Charles Xavier. And he's made me kind of sit up and be like, I want to see him in more stuff. So that's the only one I've got.
I've actually got two. And the first one, it'll probably be surprising now, but it wasn't at the time. Ian McKellen. Before he did Lord of the Rings, he was like Mr. Actor. And just, I didn't care. I didn't care anything about his acting. I was just like, well, here's another British guy. You know, it's basically what I felt. And then he started doing all the genre stuff with X-Men and Lord of the Rings and everything else. Just like, wow, this guy is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I will forever be in his corner now because he's just, you know, blew me away. He's so diverse and he can do so many different things. And it's just so, and I know I say this word too much, he's too charismatic for his own good, really. I mean, mm-hmm. The guy can just do whatever. At Pupil, fantastic. I mean, he's just a wonderful actor.
That movie was really good.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Just shocked the hell out of me. Shocked the hell out of me. The other one, and I might catch some shit for it, but I don't really care. Brendan Fraser in The Mummy. Mm-hmm. People can curse me all they want because of Encino Man or whatever, but I just thought he was such a blah.
Nobody's in the juice.
I thought he was just a blah actor. I mean, he really did anything for me. Nothing he did impress me. Then he played Rick O'Connell, and I just fell in love with the guy. I thought, here's the first guy in over a decade that I think can come close to the charm that Harrison Ford had in the Indiana Jones movies, which you guys know is all my favorite series. So to this day, even with his crappy role choices as of late, I will give the guy a chance in anything he does. I will always go and just hope. Maybe this is the one that recaptures the Brendan Fraser I saw in those movies.
Did he ever recapture it again?
No, he hasn't done it. But I keep hoping. Fingers crossed.
For some reason, every time I see him or hear his name, the one word that always comes to mind, and it's a line that he had with cocaina from that remake that he and Elizabeth Hurley did.
Yep, I know what you're talking
about.
She played
the devil.
Bedazzled.
I thought he was so funny in that.
That movie is really funny.
Yeah, he's talented. He just picks horribly,
and he's got that horrible prosthetic nose on there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that movie's so good.
For me, I only had one, but I thought of another one since we're getting these extras. The first one I thought of was George Clooney. Never cared for anything he'd really done, and mostly what he'd done was television. But when I went to go see From Dusk Till Dawn,
yeah, good pick. Yeah.
He owned that screen with a power that so few actors really possess. I mean, when he's on it, you almost can't look away. He's that good. And since then, he has continued to be phenomenally good, not just in the roles that he picks, but then how he plays them. I mean, Out of Sight, fantastic. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? I mean, come on. He's just that good. But until he got that movie, he was really just more of a TV guy. And I wasn't a big Friends fan, and he was on that for a couple of episodes. I didn't like ER all that much, and he was on that. But From Dusk Till Dawn, I mean, sure, he's got Batman and Robin. We're all going to overlook the bat nipples. I thought he was the best part of that shitty movie. But George Clooney. And then another one, though, that came to me is Elijah Wood.
Wait, before you do that one, I want to point out, I saw an interview with George Clooney a few years ago. And they asked him, at what point do you think your movie career took off? Because he was doing a lot of movies that didn't take off, and he did the Batman and Robin. And he said, From Dusk Till Dawn, because that was the first time that Hollywood saw him as anything more than just the romantic hero.
Hmm.
Yep. Everybody be cool.
Be cool.
Be cool.
Be cool. Oh, God, I need to rewatch that movie. But Elijah Wood, again, he's one of those younger actors who had done, you know, quite a few things. Nothing ever really got to me. And then, boom, he's Frodo. And owning that screen with those big old blue eyes that as he's standing in the Shire and goes through these adventures, I became an instant fan.
That makes total sense. I really didn't like him before either, honestly. Now that I think about it, he didn't really do anything that maybe – was it even Flipper? He was in one of those.
The only movie that really even stays in my mind is Deep Impact. And he was okay in that.
Yeah, that wasn't an acting movie, though. That was just
right. Everything that was more of a spectacle film, but just nothing he had done really, you know, blew up my skirts. And then, boom, there he is in Middle Earth, and he's just really so good.
Now, on the same token, which actors did you either defend wholeheartedly or you were completely on board for, only to see their performance and just slap yourself repeatedly in the head?
Shia LaBeouf. I followed him a little bit when I was.
Which one?
You want to narrow it down? The Nymphomaniac movie? You saw his dog?
No.
The one that's on IMDb.
No, like when he did movies when he was younger, I enjoyed like Holes and I liked Disturbia and. God.
Brian.
Brian, you are such a child.
You are so wrong this evening.
He's laughing and I know exactly why.
No, I mean, I even liked him in the first Transformers movie. I mean, he was okay, and I always felt like I had to defend myself for enjoying seeing him on screen and always kind of stuck up for him. And then
Transformers 2 came out.
And it's not even stuff that he did necessarily on screen. It's stuff that he did off screen where he just started becoming this douchebag that I just didn't want to respect anymore. I just want – and now he's retired and
– He's not retired.
He's what, like 24? How old is he? Like, seriously.
I liked him, and then he just became a train wreck.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah, he just fell off the tracks. I want to be an actor. Oh, shit, it's too late? Crap.
Well, yeah, I liked him in Eagle Eye. I liked him in the Transformers film.
Yeah, Eagle Eye, another good one.
Yeah, Suburbia, I thought was really well done. I think it was around the time that he got into Indiana Jones 4.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That might have been when the wheels of the train started getting rickety.
Mm-hmm. He just... maybe he lost it. Maybe he's on the heroin. I don't know. Everybody seems to be doing it these days. Mine, Tommy Lee Jones. And I still love the actor, but him as Two-Face in Batman Forever.
Oh God.
I thought this is the best casting of a villain of all time. This guy fucking knows how to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy Lee Jones.
Like an insane kind of bad guy, yeah.
What Two-Face is. I mean, he can walk into a room... And you can watch him in a movie, not hardly say anything, and you can feel whatever the hell his character is trying to make you feel.
Mm-hmm.
He's just that good an actor. He's just one of my favorite character actors of all time. You put him in a freaking comic book movie, bam, through the roof. He was awful. And he made me so angry, I just wanted to punch toddlers.
I can't stand it.
He made Jim Carrey look good.
Yeah. He did. And the worst part about Batman Forever is my son loved the movie because he was, you know, it was Jim Carrey when he was raining. You know, it was mm-hmm. Jim Carrey's reign. So I had to pretend like I enjoyed watching this piece of shit the whole time just because, I love Jim Carrey. He's so funny. I'm like, fuck, he sucks. This whole movie
I'm
going to
watch it again, Dad.
Yeah. Yay.
Fuck.
I can't wait to watch it again. This is so good.
Is that the one where they pulled the Holy Rusty Metal joke or Holy Rusty Metal Batman joke?
I can't keep them straight. There's so many shitty jokes in those movies, the Schumacher era. But seriously, Tommy Lee Jones, he should have beat the shit out of his agent. He should have taken him outside and just beat him with a whip.
It ain't his agent's fault that he pulled off such a shitty performance.
Well, at some point, it's Tommy Lee Jones. If you see him, maybe that's why he is the way he is now, where he barely talks and he won't do anything.
Because of that one movie.
Because of that one movie, and he's just like, I'm not taking chances anymore. I'm just going to be Tommy Lee Jones and everything. I'm just going to be the fugitive and everything. No doghouse, outhouse, you know, shithouse, whatever. That's all I'm going to do from now on. That's the only thing I could think of. Because
I don't know. I thought he sucked in Under Siege.
Oh, I liked him in Under Siege.
He was so over the top. It was
Dude, it was a Steven Seagal
terrible.
Movie.
I'm the smartest guy in here, and I'm just going to...
He was. Did you see it?
Well,
it was full of Steven Seagal and Gary Busey. He was the smartest guy there. He should have been driving that battleship.
I thought his performance was way too cheesy and hammy.
Not as hammy as Two-Face.
It left a very sour taste in my mouth.
Not as hammy as Two-Face. Man,
no,
he got upstaged by Aaron Eckhart. That's how sad that role was. He got upstaged by Aaron Eckhart. Justin?
My choice heralds Scotty's a little bit in that it's not the performance on screen that made me pull my hair out. It's all the hijinks off screen that ruined it for me. But it's Edward Norton and the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
I thought his Bruce Banner was actually a pretty good Bruce Banner. I liked the Incredible Hulk. As a film, especially given the Ang Lee piece of shit mm-hmm. that came out years prior. But I thought it was a solid Marvel film. But apparently, behind the scenes, he's just this terror that thinks he's in control of everything and wants all of it to be his own way. And it just soured people so much that not only did they want to put him in the Avengers, but they didn't want to make any more Hulk movies. Maybe Mark Ruffalo will save that and we might get another Hulk movie at some point.
but he just shit up that movie so bad. It's hard for me to watch it now, even though I think his performance is actually pretty good in it. I just keep seeing behind the scenes asshole.
That's fair, but he seems like he's like that with everything.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like the Val Kilmer of his generation.
Yeah, and in a movie like Fight Club or something, okay, that's a drama, do that. But in a comic book film, why don't you leave all of the ideas and whatnot to the people who actually kind of know what they're doing? Just say the words.
Edward Norton just thinks he's the man.
Yeah.
Brian?
He's hot shit on a silver platter.
Apparently me and Justin do share a brain, because I actually had that. I was kind of going a different route with it, because it was I actually had kind of Eric. It was Eric Bana and Edward Norton together. I've always been a fan of Eric Bana. He's just he's done movies like Munich. I wasn't crazy about him in Troy, but so be it. But I really noticed him in Black Hawk Down. I loved his character in Black Hawk Down. When I saw he was doing the Hulk, I got excited about that. Of course, there wasn't many comic book movies out at the time, so that just fueled more excitement. And that, of course, like I said, that Ang Lee movie was just shit. And he really didn't even do that good of a job. But I defended him. I thought, even though I knew better, I defended him, and I was just like, it's not as bad as you think. And after about the third time of watching it, I was finally realized, yeah, it is as bad as everybody.
It took you three times.
No, not really. I mean, it was, I knew deep down, but it took me two times to really kind of admit it to myself. And then the third time was really more just to openly admit it. So, but Edward Norton, kind of the same thing. I mean, he had a run of Primal Fear, Rounders, American History X, Fight Club, even comedy with like Keeping the Faith. And then he kind of fell off with some pretty bad choices and stuff.
But, Death to Smoochie.
Him in Primal Fear. God, he was good.
He was.
Oh, good. Absolutely. And then, and then it's like, okay, it's almost like this. Here's by 2008, whenever he did The Incredible Hulk, it to me, it was almost like to stay with the comic book genre thing, like a phoenix, kind of rising and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, all right, cool. This is going to be what launches him into, the A-list again. I guess I'm just assuming it was because of his off the screen antics or whatever. He kind of shot himself in the foot there. But I thought he did a decent job. I thought he did better than Eric Bana. But still, though, he wasn't quite the he didn't grab me, I guess, as much as maybe he did grab Justin in the role. So,
well, and lastly, who have you found? Here's the final one. After all these sequels, trilogies, and franchises in general, whatever, to be the most inspiring casting choice to lead them?
I don't care what people say. I will go to my grave saying that a large part of the reason why The Matrix worked was because of Keanu Reeves. I think that he is an actor, the blankness that people sometimes joke about with him, I think that is what really worked in that film. He was a bit of a cipher, and in a lot of ways, we as the audience were, he was us, we were him. He didn't have such a defined personality and persona that separated us. And I think that's what really worked. I think he's incredible in all three of those movies, and I will defend him in it till I die. Like I said, the second one though, that I had on this one, fucking Wesley Snipes is Blade. It's as though somebody went back in time and said, let me make a comic book that's going to be made for this motherfucker who is perfect for it when the time comes. Nobody could play that character the way he does.
I agree with that. Brian? Nice.
I'm going the easy route here. I'm going Johnny Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow.
Nice choice. Nice choice.
That's just, I don't think the franchise, they would make four movies if it wasn't for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just honestly believe there's nobody else that could have pulled off that role as well as he did. And I mean, of course, again, staying with the softballs here, it's Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the phase 1, 2, and 3 of Marvel can pretty much attribute it to him. Mm-hmm. And whatever he wants for whatever they've plans they've got, they should just open up a checkbook and just say, you fill out the rest, because they really do owe it all to a, you know, a reformed alcoholic drug addict that had fallen off the Hollywood map.
They really, so, that's a great pick for Inspiring Choice, because all those movies that we talk about all the time and we love wouldn't have happened if Iron Man didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the last time I saw him, he was in Tell World.
Well, Brian stole mine, so I don't have a whole lot more to add to that. But
yay.
To me, especially because of him overcoming, you know, the addiction and that kind of thing, and bouncing back and with some friends in Hollywood, that to me was inspiring. I don't have another one to add as far as a sequels or trilogies or franchises in general.
Or movie in general.
I've got one that's an odd choice maybe, but Robin Williams did a movie back in the 90s called Jack, which was about a kid that basically grows four times as fast as a normal human being.
I remember it, yeah.
And to me, just him, that seemed like a role that he was born to play, because he's always like a kid at heart kind of thing. It wasn't the greatest movie. I liked the idea of the movie more than I liked the product, although I have watched it multiple times. I actually recently watched it. But seeing him just kind of live out, in my mind, the way that I imagine him acting in person sometimes, just because he's just a big kid at heart, and that's basically what the role was. So to me, that looked like a perfect fit and worked for me.
I like that, man. I barely remember that movie, but I remember how he was just crazy Robin Williams at the time.
And that's a role where it was okay to be. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Something like Mrs. Doubtfire, sure, as well. But sometimes, especially if you see him in interviews in the late 90s when he was...
Oh, I remember, man.
He would do those interviews and he would just say random stuff just for the sake of saying random stuff. And that was kind of his shtick. But this seemed more genuine.
Mine is what Justin picked a while back, and that's Matt Damon as Jason Bourne. Mm-hmm. I really think that's probably one of the most inspiring casting choices I've seen in a film in a long time. Just because of what he said, same thing you said, Montgomery. Who would have thought Matt Damon was an action hero?
Right.
Nobody else did. Because we knew that movie was coming out, we're like, yeah, okay, I'll be sure to get right in line for that shit. And he single-handedly changed action films for well over a decade. He made... If people remember, before the Bourne movie, every action movie that was successful was really about these big, bulking guys, you know, like Stallone or fast martial artists like Seagal or one of those guys, you know, just crushing people's skulls left and right. Here you had a guy who was smart, quick. He didn't have any real athletic ability outside of the fact that he was trained and he's intelligent and he's thinking ahead of everyone else, you know. He made a thinking man's action hero, which really hadn't been done before. I loved it. And just seeing him in that made me completely rethink what kind of actor he was. Because before that, I'm like, you know, applesauce, bitch. That's really all I thought he could do. And he became something different. Now, before we go on to Ho Corner, let's talk a little bit about what our listeners thought. You guys ready? Here's some of the choices our listeners thought. Morgan Freeman as God. Touche. That's from Josh Steima. Ashley Stewart, Adele Exarchopoulos in Blue is the Warmest Color. I'm not even going to try and get that correct. Michael Fassbender in Shame. Robert Downey Jr. in Sherlock Holmes. Especially if you followed Sherlock Holmes, that seemed a little risky to me too. Omar Sy in The Intouchables. D.A. Chaney said Jessica Lange as Sister Jude. That's from American Horror Story Season 2. Noomi Rapace as Elizabeth in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, good call.
Chris Pine as Captain Kirk. Zachary Quinto as Spock. And Siler. So there's Star Trek and Heroes mentioned right there. Dave McGrath says Chris Reeve. I'm sorry, David McGrath. Some people don't like to be shortened. Chris Reeve as Superman. Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger. Clyde the Orangutan in Eastwood's Any Which Way movies. It's a bit out there, I know. And the entire cast of The Goonies. Like, everybody, apparently. Even Data. Angela Lee, the entire cast of Harry Potter, kudos. But specifically, Alan Rickman as Snape. Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn. Good call. Leonardo DiCaprio in Django Unchained. Christian Bale as Batman. Craig Schermerhorn? Josh Brolin as young Agent K in MIB3.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
That's a good pick. I never even thought of that. Scott Calgaro says, if you were a fan of the original serial novel, Michael Clark Duncan was the only choice for John Coffey in The Green Mile. Perfect casting.
Ooh,
that's
good call.
Good call.
That's Calgaro.
Is it Calgaro?
Calgaro.
I'm sorry. Also, Carl Urban as Dr. McCoy in the new Star Trek reboot.
That's a good one.
He had to have done some serious studying of DeForest Kelly's performances. He nailed the mannerisms perfectly. Austin Price, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. That seems to be a popular choice. Good choice, Austin. Charles Patterson, Ashton Kutcher as Steve Jobs. I think you should rewatch that movie. I disagree with
that one. I'm hoping that's sarcasm.
I hope so. Topher Grace as Venom. Okay. Yes, this is sarcasm. Ashton Kutcher as Steve Jobs. Topher Grace as Venom. Aaron Eckhart as Frankenstein. Oh, and Ben Affleck as Batman. All right.
Yeah, we don't know that one yet.
We don't know that yet, but I see where you're getting to. I know where you're going now. Nice catch, McCumber, because I didn't. I thought he was serious. Oh. All right, Hope Corner. Every week, these guys have to sit there and deal with whatever I told them to talk about. So each week, one of the hoes gets a chance to vent about whatever's on his mind. Brian, it's your turn. What do you want to bitch about?
A number of shows recently have kind of announced that they're ending within the next year or two. You know, Sons of Anarchy, Justified, Psych, because that wasn't mentioned enough to fucking tonight. What do you guys think is the optimal number of seasons for a television series? For instance, like Justified, how many seasons is that? Is that going to make it? Is it six?
Six, yeah, six.
Six, okay. Which is a good run. Is a good run, but then you've got series like NCIS and, CSI. The original CSI is going on 14 years being on the air. You know, Law and Order SVU has been on since I don't know 1952 or something.
Roughly
before Scott was born.
Right.
Roughly.
So I don't know. I'm throwing it out there to you guys, and whoever wants to jump in there, go ahead. But what do you think is the optimal number? What's the best number that works for you that before you start losing interest?
5 or 6 years. Yeah. I've actually thought about this quite a bit. 5 or 6 years. Yeah, I think more than 6 years, and you're pushing my interest to begin with. And how many shows can we count on how many hands that have actually kept your interest for more than 6 years? I can maybe think of 3 or 4.
24?
Well, of course, 24. That goes without saying. 24 and Psych. There we go.
But really, outside of those 5 that we've just listed.
Yeah. No, there's not many.
How many can you really say?
I'm saying 5 or 6. I think, you know, I think every show should have an end date. Like Breaking Bad was perfect with that.
It really was. 5 or 6 was literally going to be my exact answer. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good target number, but it really depends for me on what kind of show it is and how much energy and enthusiasm the cast and crew have for the show. If it's, you know, a show that you can tell that people are kind of done with it after the first 4 seasons, then just kill it and be done with it. But if it's, you know, a show where everybody's enthusiastic to be there and they're still pumping out really good episodes, then keep it going. I mean, Buffy lasted for 7 seasons, and even in its some of its weaker stuff, weak Buffy is still better than most other shit on television. So I'm glad that it got to last as long as it did. I think that the X-Files, when did Mulder leave the show? What season was it? 7?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Somewhere around there.
That's when it should have ended.
So yeah, I mean, you got 7 pretty good seasons out of that one. So really, I don't want a show to get killed before its time, but I think it's far more likely that shows go on past their due date. But 6, 5 seasons, that sounds like a pretty good run.
Good question, Bri. All right. Now, each week, those who like us on Facebook, we will mention you on the show the following week. So if you go to facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, next week we'll give you a whole shout out. Thanks to, I hope I say this right, Miriam Kurt Kilk, Scott Calgaro.
Calgaro.
Calgaro. Mark Thompson, Amaxa, Carly Perez. Thanks for liking us.
Mark Thompson? Thompson?
Fuck you.
John Cocktoasten.
Fletch. Love Fletch. Let's go to emails. We got to wrap the show up. Justin.
Yeah, we do. This email is from Tess Juvencio. Says, I just recently got into listening to podcasts and found you hoes. I downloaded your episodes to have something to drown out the bitching, whining, and gossiping going on at work. Well, that's some faint praise right there.
Oh, no, so, she didn't. That bitch did not do that to you. Uh-uh. Yeah.
So many times I wanted to laugh out loud because of the funny stuff you guys say, but I can't because I don't want everybody at work or on the bus to think I'm crazy. Sometimes I can't hold it in that I have to cover with a cough. Thanks so much for making my work day go by so much faster. Thanks. You're welcome.
Thanks, Tessie. That was very nice. Appreciate it. Brian?
All right. This is from one of our favorites, Junebug. She tweets us back at us. What subjects, time frames have been overlooked? She was retweeting us, basically. Mm-hmm. And she said she'd like to see Ancient Greece, but not as an action movie.
I like that. Mm-hmm. That's a good pick.
So what kind of...
I'd have to guess. What would you like to?
What would you like to see happen?
About feudal Japan,
love story, maybe. God, every idea I come up with outside of like a love story or some political drama, with the evolution of democracy or something.
That's what I would like to see. I think that would work fine with Greece. Yeah, I would like to see how Rome fell outside of war. You know, like the internal workings. I could see that.
Have there been a lot of Revolutionary War movies outside of The Patriot? So many things that went on in that war. I mean, headless people with witches. I mean, come on.
That's really Glory? No, that was a Civil War.
That was Civil War. Yeah. Civil War has been done to death.
Last of the Mohicans was during that time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so there have been a couple. I'm saying that there's a lot more material. I mean, the whole
Absolutely. It's not a tapped out wealth by any stretch.
Don't give Hollywood any ideas. That's the last thing they need to do is just make a ton of movies about that one.
Also, we got six different George Washingtons.
Yeah.
I like Scott's idea. Japan. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, you got another one, Brian.
Oh, all right. Yeah, this is from Sean McDonald. Says, "Hey guys, this week's What's This Movie is from Office Space. One of the few people apparently who got it right." Also, I'm a big fan of the show, so please take this critique with that in mind. Yeah, I've heard that before. You're a nice guy, but if the show is supposed to be a movie review podcast and not a let's talk about movies I like podcast, then I think some of you guys need to be a bit more open-minded about films in general. It seems that if it isn't a comic book, sci-fi, zombie, thriller, a lot of you guys dismiss it. It's a lot like a guy who reviews restaurants that doesn't eat fish. Anyway, keep up the great work. I'll be listening. All the best, Sean.
Sean, that's why they have me on the show.
And myself, thank you, because I'm pretty broad when it comes to the films.
Broad in the ass.
Well, you know, I think that one of the reasons we talk so much about those types of movies is because they're so prevalent these days. You can't throw a stick in a movie theater, it seems like, without hitting a comic book film or a zombie movie. So that's naturally going to come up more. But we've talked a lot about animated films. Scott and I are big fans of musicals. I think we do a lot of talking about these, but there's definitely other types of films that we do discuss. I mean, I will probably go see Vampire Academy.
Really?
Oh, what?
If only to review it.
Uh-huh.
Jeez.
Uh-huh. Well, see, and that's the thing.
I don't know if that's being open-minded or stupid.
I went Frankenstein going, oh God, please don't. Please don't suck.
Yeah.
And one thing I will say to Sean, to be fair, you know, this isn't a job for us. We're not getting paid to do this. We don't get paid to get. You know, we're
that's
not
true. Well, legit, you guys aren't getting paid.
I'm not getting paid.
Just kidding.
we do this. We do this because
Aaron's like, I don't. I know why I show up every week, but I don't know why.
Make it rain.
Who wants to ride my plane?
So, we do this for fun.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna go see movies that we like, and I think we've got a good mixture of us. I mean, predominantly there's a lot of comic book and that kind of thing because we all have that common interest. So then you have four guys sit down and we're gonna talk about something that we all have in common. You know, but
comic books, football,
I do think we're more diverse than maybe the last couple of weeks because it really has been a dry spell. So we're really talking a lot about movies that are more our favorites because there hasn't been really a whole lot of quality that isn't in those genres.
But we would be hard pressed to find a podcast that we haven't talked about a comic book character.
Yeah.
Honestly.
These days. But I get what you're saying, and we try to be as broad as we can. So hopefully we'll continue to do so.
And we have the luxury of watching movies that we want to instead of ones that we have to for review.
That's true.
Aaron doesn't give us homework and say, go watch this movie and review it.
I sometimes wish I did.
Better not.
Mm-hmm. And you guys can always email or tweet or hit us up on Facebook or whatever and let us know which ones you want us to talk about.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if you don't fucking like it, go listen to Film Spotting. You can edit that out.
What's their website?
All right, Scott.
All right, we also got an email from Scott Calgaro.
I'm leaving it in, by the way.
Which is one of our new listeners. He says, I'm a new listener to your podcast, and I must say I'm loving every second of it. My wife is a fan, and she has tried for the longest time to get me to listen, and I finally gave in. So glad I did. I have an hour and a half commute to work every day, which I've been using to catch up on back episodes, which brings me to the subject of this email. And yes, it's a trip back in time for your show. He's actually been going back and listening to old episodes.
Oh, wow. I recommend somewhere around the 100 mark.
was that the drunk episode?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Episode 100 is still my favorite because it has the best of everything.
This morning I listened to an episode in which you discussed the topic of Thanksgiving movies. While there is certainly a lack of films featuring that holiday, TV shows tend to pull out all the stops when it comes to Thanksgiving episodes. Friends in particular comes to mind as a show that really played up that particular holiday. And if you haven't seen a Thanksgiving episode of WKRP in Cincinnati, then you haven't seen what is quite possibly the funniest 11 minutes of television ever filmed.
Oh, he's right, yeah.
And that leads me into the second topic I want to address. I listened to the episode where you guys panned and praised TV theme songs. May have been the same episode, actually. I've listened to so many I've lost track. While commuting in a snowstorm, and I laughed so hard, I nearly caused a pileup on I-90 of Atlantean proportions.
Wow.
I think there was more than 2 inches of snow, though. So, WKRP had an awesome theme, and I'm sorry to admit that I'm one of the Star Trek Enterprise fans that love the theme.
It's been a long road. Getting from
Keep
there.
Talking. Keep talking.
Taken by itself, the song sucks, especially when Justin sings it.
Sure does.
But if you pair it with the edited cuts that make up the opening opening credits, you can see where the producers were trying to go using that song.
They didn't go there. They didn't go there. They didn't get there.
Justin, if
you got there, it's just a long way.
Justin, if you're playing that song because you're a fan, then you are absolutely awesome. If not, suck it. All four of you are wrong.
I like this guy.
I haven't even seen it, so I don't even know how to know.
You can still suck it, Scott.
I can still suck it. You guys have hooked a permanent listener, and I promise future emails will be related to current episodes. Rock on, hose, Scott Calgaro.
And thank your wife for getting you to listen and for being a fan.
Absolutely. Yes. And Sean, I really hope you don't think we were giving you a grief. We really weren't. Sincerely, we get your point. We really do. Philip Cruz, I just want to say thank you, sir, because he sent a message to, actually just to me, so, you know, props to you for knowing who's the shit around here, letting me know that Silver Linings Playbook was only $10 on Blu-ray at Target, like there's a big deal in Pacific Rim and World War Z, but he remembered it, and that, to me, is a true fan because he helped the brother out, because I've been trying to get that movie forever, and it's always like $25, so I want to say thank you, sir, thank you.
You people in your physical media.
Shut up. It also has the digital copy. So I got both. So I can see jiggling on every format. All right. And this is an email from Zach. He just wanted to let Justin know he can be excited. The same studio that is making a Ratchet. Oh, he's talking about the Sly Cooper film. Sly Cooper?
Yeah. Sly Cooper.
Sly Cooper. Yeah. The same studio that
I was talking about a totally different type of Ratchet.
The same studio that made Sly Cooper is making a Ratchet film, Ratchet and Clank film, and it's going to be hitting theaters in 2015.
Yeah, we actually talked about that already.
Yeah, it was a while back though. So
it was a while ago. I've slept since then.
Hell, they're even making a DVD movie based on Heavenly Sword. They seem to
that is awesome.
They seem to be quite in bed with Sony right now. Fingers crossed for a Jax and Daxter movie as well.
Oh, Heavenly Sword is so good.
Not Jax and Daxter. Jack and Daxter.
Is it? I don't know.
It's not Sons of Anarchy.
I'm sorry. Anyway, Jax Teller? Is that what the movie's about? Is this a cartoon? Is it a cutesy little thing?
Yeah, it's a guy with the
aviators. I don't really give a shit. Let's move on. All right, so you can stay through the credits for outtakes. TheHollywoodOutsider.com is our website. Tweet us at @H_Outsider. We got to get these episodes under control, man. They're just flowing over 2 hours. People are going to stop listening.
Hey, that's what the masses are calling for.
Leave us a message or text us at 818-814-6426. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And apparently, if you're listening, this is probably your second or third go-round on the bus because, man, this is long. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app or through our RSS feed. And that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. I want to thank Justin, Brian, and Scott for being here.
Holla.
Really? Peace. You guys can say bye. You can, you know, say bye.
Are we still talking about this shit?
Justin, you want to say bye? Oh, fuck off.
Getting from there to here.
And remember the next time you go to a come back next week. We're going to talk about love movies. Romance. Romance is the topic next week. So send us your favorite romantic movies or movies where you were surprised to find romance in them.
It's for I'm going to be such a bitch next week.
It's for the ladies next week.
Die Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Die Hard is everything. It's a romantic movie. It's a Christmas movie.
It's a porn movie of Brian's off.
No, it's not a Christmas movie.
Remember, the next time you go to a theater, it's totally a Christmas movie. Buy popcorn.
Mm-hmm. You really shouldn't call them your girls, by the way.
I disagree.
It sounds like you're a pimp.
Okay.
My bitches. Go with my bitches.
My ladies.
You sound extra pervy when you say that. My ladies.
Notice how he slowed down. Mm-hmm. My ladies.
I don't know if you guys can hear me, but you guys are really low. I'm trying to figure out a volume issue.
What?
Huh?
Dickheads. I hear you, but it sounds like you're wearing the ball gag that you usually wear on Saturday nights.
Oh, you probably fucked with your speaker settings, son.
When we're having the sex.
Fucking hate you guys.
You missed it. Scott finally found out that the sex is really the true romantic definition when you do it.
Yeah, because I heard it from a fifth grader. Yeah, that makes it legit.
Dude, they learn early now.
Yeah.
Check, check, check.
Yeah, we hear you fine. Do you hear us?
Yeah, now you're better.
What was it?
We're better.
Tell me it was the speaker
button. We're
better.
Button. We
weren't
bad.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, when I heard a woman respond to a question with, that's a negative Ghost Rider, I wanted to fuck her right there.
Yep.
When it hits about July, you'll be thinking 75 with fond memories.
I'll absolutely be like, oh, 75. That's, oh, 25 degrees or less. I would kill for that.
I would literally kill. Test me, God.
I hear they're kind of bad. So you've never really been down south in the summer? No. I'm from Minnesota. Yeah, okay. So you're going to die.
I had, I think, 7 fans in my room at the beginning of the year, and it was just unbearable.
And I just got one for your balls. You're like, oh Jesus!
Yeah, I got it on the floor, standing over it. Wore a mini skirt.
One
that
leg
day.
Over it.
I wore a mini skirt that day.
All of a sudden, you're showing on the bat wing.
Oh God!
Won't let me like your status.
What's that? Who?
Scott's.
What's Scott doing?
What is his status? Cock in the mouth?
When you got it up and you're ready to enter. The hoe.
Parents.
That's what our opening music should be. Prepare to enter the hoe.
That's a blue waffles action right there.
Oh, God. I sadly know what that is.
Can I just point out, Scott totally just did a magic mic and he took his tie off and threw it across the room and then unbuttoned his shirt.
Ew.
How was that? Are magic you turned mic? On?
Wait, should I say that a little slower? Uh-huh. Scott just took off his tie and he threw it across the room.
All right.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
Why don't we drop? Why can't we drop it when we need to? All right, phone's down.
All right. Hands in the air.
Wave them like you just don't care.
I say, hey! No?
Oh!
There we go.